Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key, or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away, huh. But I feel alright, I feel alright tonight. Feel alright. I feel alright tonight. And I bring you precious contraband and ancient.
All right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m. It is Friday. So all the regular Friday features will be happening. We will have You Big Dummy, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, Fly Jams Friday. And we have a double edition of Vic's Picks this morning, which will start after the 3 o'clock news. For those of you who know, Vic was dissatisfied with his lack of musical knowledge and decided that he was going to educate himself and go on a musical adventure by listening to the entire top 100 albums of all time, according to Rolling Stone list. And that's what he's been doing. And we've been following along on that journey. And he's going to tell us about some of the albums that he's been listening to recently, and what he likes about them and what he's learning about them and all that cool stuff. And he's got four albums that we're going to catch up with. And that's going to start after 3 o'clock. And that'll kick off our regular features that begin here on Friday morning. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text, 312-981-7200. And for Fly Jam requests, 312-981-7200. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. You can also follow us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/Nick D Show. Coming up after the 2 o'clock news, Kevin O'Hare is going to join us. He is the owner of the Bad Apple Bar and Restaurant in Lincoln Square, known for their unbelievable burgers. And they're expanding the menu. And we're going to talk a little bit about the restaurant, about the bar, and about the burgers with the owner, Kevin O'Hare. He's going to be live in studio with us after the 2 o'clock news. We are also in honor of the new Quentin Tarantino movie, which basically opened tonight, and that's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. We're going to be talking about the best Quentin Tarantino characters. ScreenCrush.com put together their list of the best Quentin Tarantino characters, and we're going to do that. And then our regular features as well. And then coming up in just a few minutes, our good friend Jeff Tuckman is going to be here live in studio. And if you have a question about a movie, movie's availability, a DVD question, tech question, Blu-ray question, if you can't think of the title of a movie, but you can describe it to us or tell us who's in it, we really help you out there. If I don't know, Jeff doesn't know, certainly the listeners will know. We have a really, really good track record on helping people remember the names of movies that they just can't remember. So there you go. So again, 312-981-7200 for questions for Jeff and all that cool stuff. Talk or text. All right. Let's say hello to my producer, Tom Hush. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Nick.
How are you?
I'm great.
Good. So you saw last night, you went to go see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Tarantino's new movie. And for people who don't know, you're a Tarantino freak.
Yeah, absolute freak. Own every single one of his movies, whether he directed it or he wrote it or anything. I've got multiple books on Tarantino. I'm a Tarantino freak.
Okay. Well, what did you think?
So I think this is probably the top of the middle tier. You know, it's nice because he's done 9 films now. We can separate it into thirds.
Yeah.
This is probably the best of the middle third. It's not going to touch stuff like Pulp Fiction or, for me, even Inglourious Basterds. But I think this is a great picture. It's clearly him reflecting on his own place in the movie world now. And it's not for the faint of heart. It's nearly 3 hours long.
Yep.
But it really does a good job of keeping you interested. DiCaprio and Pitt are never better. They're so good in this. And it's a really interesting look at the golden age of Hollywood.
Okay. All right. I'm seeing it with my folks tomorrow. We're going. We're going on Saturday afternoon.
I'm very curious to see what your folks think. The last, I'd say, like 20 to 30 minutes.
Yeah, I've heard that. I don't. You know, obviously, we're not going to give anything away. But I've heard that the last like half hour, last 20 minutes is just unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Okay. All right. Well, Tom saw it. He saw it in 70 millimeter at the Music Box, and they're showing it this week in 70 millimeter. If you want to see it, you know, in the beautiful 70 millimeter world, the Once Upon a Time in America. Once Upon a Time in America. See, I'm going right back. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Once Upon a Time in America is Sergio Leone. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is the movie we're talking about, Quentin Tarantino's movie. So there you go. Tom, as a Quentin Tarantino freak, he loved it. So there you go. Let's go into the newsroom, and it's Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Morning, sir.
How are you, buddy?
Doing very well.
Good. Excited, man. We're excited to do four albums with you this morning.
Right on. I'm excited, too.
Yeah. Well,
because two of these albums I'd never listened to, and the other two... one of them I just loved.
Yeah.
And then the fourth, I didn't even realize, I thought it would be totally new to me, and I knew most of them. I just didn't know the names, or they must have got a lot of playtime.
Yeah.
Because I don't normally know songs on these albums I've been listening to.
Yeah. Well, there you go. But that'll start at after 3 o'clock. What do you got going for the weekend? Anything?
Yeah, I have my two boys. And Jeannie's in Wisconsin Saturday. So I don't know, man. We're gonna have to come up with something.
Okay.
Boys' night out.
All right.
I don't know.
All right. Well,
one's in the eighth grade, so we're limited a little on.
Yeah,
what
you
we
are
can
limited
do.
In the a little bit on the boys' night out if you're gonna go out with
yeah.
with an eighth grader.
Yeah.
He's bigger
almost than me and my other son now. So I'm not kidding.
You know, I'm a little disappointed that Jeannie's gonna be out of town because you guys aren't gonna be together to watch the Milwaukee and the Cubs play their weekend games.
I'm not upset about that at all.
For those people who don't know, Jeannie is a Milwaukee Brewers fan. So whenever the Cubs play the Brewers, it's always interesting in the Vic Vaughn household when those two teams play. So
yep, and through football season too.
Oh yeah, sure. Green Bay. She's a Packers fan.
Sure, she is. Close.
Oh man, and you're a huge Bears fan.
I am. So this will be fun season.
That'll be great. Have they announced the schedule?
Yeah, they had to already.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because they start preseason in like 2 weeks, right?
They're already in training camp.
Yeah.
I know preseason starts sometime in August. So yeah, I'm getting excited already.
I know, man. I know you love football, and I know you love the Bears. So that should be fun. But yeah, that's got to be tough, man. A Packers fan in the house.
It has been the last few years, but not so much anymore.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not afraid.
Well, you know what? I'll tell you something. We were talking about this with Kevin Powell last week. What an exciting season last year for the Bears. Like, nobody expected what they did. You know, it was a dead. I mean, the final, what happened, how the season ended was terrible, obviously. Like, really, you know, horrible. But everything leading up to that was so surprising. They played so well. They were so much fun to watch. Terrific season last year, and I think it's only going to be better this year.
We'll see, but I know that kick. You know, I mean, if we had a better kicker, we probably could have.
Yeah.
You know, who knows what would have happened? But it felt a lot like after seeing the postseason, it felt like we would have had a good showing.
I gotta say though, what are the odds of it hitting the bar like that? I mean, what are the odds of that happening? I mean, how horrible was that?
Oh.
Well, anyway, they got brand new season coming up, and Vic's excited about it, and Jeannie's excited about the Packers. So there you go. All right, and again, we got the Brewers. The Cubs are going to be at Wrigley North this weekend playing the Brewers, so that should be a fun season.
I said that to a Brewers fan today.
What did they say?
Yesterday.
Were they happy?
They nearly punched me in the face. Oh, I thought he was going to absolutely deck me.
Yeah, well, all right. So, anyway, all right, listen, Jeff Tuckman joins us once a month. He's a great guy, been a part of the show for many, many, many years. And again, if you want any questions for Jeff, like tech questions, when something's going to be released, he'll let you know. If something's available on DVD, or you can't think of the title of a movie and it's making you crazy, you can describe it to us or tell us who's in it. Get in here now, start calling now at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. There you go. But let's make this official. Shall we make this official? Let's do that.
It's time to fire up that 16 millimeter projector.
It was available on VHS at one time.
The Nick DiGilio Show presents your international man of movie mystery.
I tell you, I'm a magnet. I'm a magnet. Nick, I don't know. It's just a video craze.
I'm assuming that maybe you should do the Howard Stern Show at some point.
Tuckman. Jeff Tuckman.
Walking in the city of my life.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here. And, yeah, that makes it official. Jeff Tuckman has been a part of the show for many years. And he joins us every month to answer your questions and give a preview of what's coming up and find out what's available and all that cool stuff. Jeff, welcome back.
Hey, Nick. How you doing?
I'm all right, man. How are you?
Doing great.
Very, 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 very cool. And Jeff is here to answer all your questions and to help you out. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Jeff always comes in bearing gifts that we will give away. And tell everybody what you brought in this morning.
Well, today I wanted to do something a little bit different. Last time I was here, we did the complete Married with Children.
That's right.
11 seasons.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And this, I was thinking about the Academy Awards and everything, but Bohemian Rhapsody, I love Queen, one of my favorite groups. Even when Paul Rogers was singing with them, Adam Lambert, but you could never beat, you know, Freddie and everything else. But this was just the music is what, to me at least, drove everything, and I thought Robbie Malek was great. But I always liked him, you know.
So we're giving away a copy of Bohemian Rhapsody. The less I say about how I feel about this movie, I think the better off we are. But Jeff brought it in. We're giving it away. And I know a lot of people enjoyed the movie, made a lot of money at the box office. People went to go see it, a couple of times a piece. I myself, not a fan, but we are giving away Bohemian Rhapsody. And we got four copies to give away this morning. So if you want to, let's do that really quickly. How about caller number five? Caller number five, 312-981-7200, 312-591, man, I'm going back in time. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Caller number five will get a copy on DVD of the movie Bohemian Rhapsody, which actually has the full recreation of the Live Aid performance in this. That's one of the special editions. There's some special stuff on the DVD as well. So there you go. Fifth caller will win a copy of Bohemian Rhapsody on DVD. And we thank Jeff for bringing that in and always bringing stuff for the listener. How long have you been doing this since the 80s, right? And when you started on Roy's show?
Started with Roy, which is where you and I met.
Yeah.
It was, Roy was tremendous. He gave the whole video, he believed in, obviously he loved, the two things he loved. He loved movies and he loved his music.
Yeah.
The whole thing video, it's hard to think about it today when you can't find a video store anywhere. But Roy was a huge supporter of that.
Yeah.
And so I started on WGN in the 80s. When Roy retired, we were both at the Roy's retirement.
1998, he retired.
He retired.
December of 1998.
And when you started your own gig here,
yeah,
I was on your first show. And
yep.
We also were on, I think, the second to last show in the Showcase studio.
Yeah.
In the old building. So
yeah.
I've been on WGN for a long time.
Long time. And you're always helping out the listeners and bringing really cool stuff to give away. And we do that once a month here with Jeff. Jeff, why don't you hang on? We're going to take a quick break, okay?
You got it.
And if you have any questions for Jeff, we would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. So there you go. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. By the way, Kevin O'Hare, who's the owner of the Bad Apple Bar and Restaurant in Lincoln Square, is going to join us live in studio to talk about the restaurant and all the really cool burgers and other great things that they have there. There you go. You heard that's Bohemian Rhapsody, the song by Queen. Jeff Tuckman is here. Jeff, welcome back.
Good to be here.
And Jeff has brought in a copy of the movie Bohemian Rhapsody, and we've got four copies to give away. And the first one went to our friend Michael in Elmwood Park, and we'll give away three more before the end of the segments here. So again, Michael in Elmwood Park is our winner, and we'll give another one away in a little bit. So there you go. All right, Jeff is here. Jeff Tuckman joins us, once a month, as we always say. And if you have a question about a movie, you can't think of the title of it, or you're wondering if something is available on DVD or Blu-ray, we'll want to help you out And if we don't know it, we can leave it out there, and some of the listeners are always. We have very smart listeners here. So 312-981-7200 for talk and text. 312-981-7200. Jeff, are you ready for a couple of calls here?
You got it.
All right, let's see. Here's Elizabeth on WGN. Hi, Elizabeth.
Good morning. Good morning. This has been driving me nuts. It's a Cary Grant movie, and the only thing I remember about it was that he loved borscht, which is a beet soup.
Yeah, I know what borscht is. So Cary Grant loved borscht.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think it was Bishop's Wife, but it was one of those good movies that he had.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, do you remember if it's in color?
No, it's black and white.
Black and white. Okay. Well, we'll leave that out there. Maybe somebody will know. Keep your radio on, okay, Elizabeth?
Thank you, darling.
Okay, take care. Do you know offhand?
No, borscht. I'm not.
How do you spell borscht? Is it B-O-R-S-T?
I know what it tastes like.
Well, yeah, so do I.
Yes.
All right. Well, let's see. All right, maybe somebody knows. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Okay, let's see. Here is Tony on WGN. Hi, Tony.
Yes. This is kind of a weird one. It's from the 70s. I believe it's early to mid-70s. And it's an alien movie, Alien Invasion. Obviously, people went out to teenagers went out to a cabin. But the thing that stuck out was the aliens had these little frisbee-type things they threw at you. They had teeth in the center of it and worms that came out the sides. And I can't remember the name of this movie.
Oh, okay.
There's no big name actors that I know about in it, or at least if they did, I don't remember. But you know, it was about the time of the Food of the Gods, Empire of the Ants, that type of movie back then.
All right, so 70s, they would throw these discs. They had teeth in the middle of them, and that okay, that one doesn't ring a bell for me, Tony. We'll leave it out there. 70s alien movie. So leave that out there. If you guys know that one, help us out. By the way, I believe that the movie that Elizabeth was talking about, where Cary Grant enjoyed borscht, is Talk of the Town with Gene Arthur and Ronald Colman from 1942. So that's the only thing that she remembered, was that he enjoyed borscht. So, but that's the only thing that I could find. I was doing a little research, and it seems to be that the movie that Cary Grant enjoys a nice bowl of borscht in is The Talk of the Town with Gene Arthur and Ronald Colman. So there you go. And I believe it's available. I know it's available on Prime Video, but not sure if it's available on DVD or Blu-ray. We'll try to figure that one out. Okay? All right. Let's before we break here for the news, Tom, let's do another giveaway here. Let's do caller 4. Caller number 4, you will get a copy of the movie Bohemian Rhapsody. We have 4 of them total to give away. If you are caller number 4 at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200, caller number 4 will get a copy of the movie Bohemian Rhapsody. And there you go, courtesy of our good friend Jeff Tuckman, who brought it in. So Talk of the Town, you remember Talk of the Town with Ronald Colman and Cary Grant?
Oh, yeah. It is available.
Yeah, it's available, and he likes borscht.
He likes borscht, and you can get it on DVD and Blu-ray.
There you go. Always available. There you go. Okay, Jeff, hang on, all right?
You got it, buddy.
All right, still, caller number 4, once you get in here, you will win your copy of Bohemian Rhapsody, and then after that, we'll have 2 more copies to give away before 2 a.m., and any questions or comments for Jeff, can't think of the title of a movie, wondering if something is available, 312-981-7200. If you know the name of that 70s alien movie that Tony described, you can help us out with that, too. But we're going to go. We're going to break here for the news, and then more after that. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m. All of our regular Friday features are going to start at 3 o'clock when we get a double dose of Vic's picks. We're going to find out about 4 albums that Vic listened to as he makes his way through the top 100 albums of all time, according to Rolling Stone. Yeah, that was Queen that you heard. Jeff Tuckman is with us, and Jeff brought in some copies of the movie Bohemian Rhapsody to give away, and that's what we're giving away this morning. Got four of them. We got two more to give away because Tom from Marengo was our winner number two, and we've got two more copies of the movie to give away. And we also have your questions to be answered right here on 720 WGN if you want to jump in. And Jeff, welcome back.
Good to be here.
It's always
Nick.
Fun to have you here. Let's see what we got here. Here is G on WGN. Hi, G.
Hey, how are you? Wanted to ask Jeff, is there a catalog of all the musical shows that PBS has aired over the years? And if so, can they be purchased?
Well, some of them can. There isn't a, you know, you can get a brochure. On PBS, they really promote a lot of their masterpiece theaters, a lot of those shows. Personally, I've taped a lot of those music shows because, if you remember, even Soundstage,
which was taped right here in Chicago,
yep. was on PBS. But they have some great, great shows. Neil Diamond, Dennis DeYoung. I mean, it's just there's so many. It's hard. There's so many of them.
I think if you go to the, because PBS has a website. It's a, you know, you can go to pbs.org, and if you go to that website, I'm really sure that they probably have stuff that you can get. You know, what's available, or at least they have links that are available. I know a ton of PBS stuff is available on DVD and Blu-ray. A ton of it, and including documentaries and music and all kinds of stuff. And it's usually available not too far after it airs. Like they air it, and then like within a couple 3 months. You can get it on DVD.
Yeah, it's really a shame because WTTW, with Channel 11 here, PBS, had their own store at one time.
Yeah.
I remember shopping there, right? And they had a great, great selection.
They did.
Every one of their shows was available. So I think what you have to do is you have to look for it individually, and that's how you'll find it. But like Nick said, they've got their own website. You can go on Amazon. You can go on eBay. You can find it.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff out there. PBS has a ton of stuff. All right, G, thanks for the call. All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here is Jefferson on WGN. Hi, Jefferson.
Nick, good morning. How are you?
All right.
I got to say, I love your show. I only listen to it when I can't sleep, but you're the only personality on that station who's not a leftist nut job, and I appreciate that.
Well, don't assume that, Jefferson. So, I don't talk about it on the air, but yeah, that seems to be my politics, Jefferson. I'm sorry to disappoint you. I just don't talk politics on the station.
Well, that's good. I'll continue to listen.
Okay.
So, for your guests, two movies from the 80s that seem to can't be found. Neighbors,
yeah.
And Scandal. Any word from your
Scandal?
From your guest there.
I don't know what Neighbors is available, Jefferson. It is. It's available. It's on, and I know that you can either also watch it on Amazon Prime. It's available on Amazon Prime, and it is available on DVD. It might be a little bit hard to find, but I know I went to eBay, and they have. You can go to eBay, and you can get a copy for like $7.99.
Is that used?
It's either one. You can get new or used. $17.99 if it's not, but it's available. It's there. You have to do a little digging. Scandal is a movie that I love. That movie
Totally underrated movie of the 80s.
It's an incredible. It's a great film. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that one's available on Blu-ray or DVD. Have you looked it up, Tom?
I will. I looked for Neighbors, and Mill Creek has done this kind of retro VHS style re-releasing of a lot of their catalogs.
Right,
stuff
right.
Like
so
White
it looks
Line.
Like, looks they, like a VHS.
Yeah, yeah. So Neighbors has got a brand. You get brand new copy in this really cool VHS style. $9 on Amazon.
There you go. $9, Jefferson. You can get it brand new.
Is Mill Creek like a video version of Rhino? Is it just?
I mean, it's a releasing house.
Yeah,
you know, they do that kind of thing.
There's a lot of that. Like Shout Factory is another one. There's a lot of independent companies that are releasing really interesting Blu-rays and DVDs now, and it's similar to what Rhino used to do. It's a similar kind of thing. But Scandal is I mean, I don't know what's going on with Scandal, and I don't have that movie at home, and you're right, Jefferson, I don't think it's available, but it's a terrific movie if people have not seen it. It's a really good movie.
Well, thanks for taking my call,
Mike. All right, buddy, take care. All right. How about this? Oh, by the way, for Tony, if you're listening, we got some text that came in. The alien movie is called Without Warning.
Oh, yes.
That's the alien movie that Tony was describing, Without Warning, and it seems to be available on DVD, so you can get it. Without Warning for our listener, Tony. All right, here's Terry on WGN. Hi, Terry.
Hey, Nick. How's it going?
All right, what's up?
I'm trying to find either a VHS or a DVD version of the Ernest Borgnine Disney Black Hole movie.
The Black Hole, yes. I think that's available.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I'm sure you can get it. I think if you do a little looking, it's available. It's also available on Prime Video if you choose to watch it that way. But yeah, you can get the Black Hole on DVD.
$5 on Amazon.
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Thanks.
Thanks. Take care. All right. Well, why don't we do another giveaway here for Bohemian Rhapsody? What caller do we want to do? Six. Caller number six. 312-981-7200. Another copy of the movie Bohemian Rhapsody to give away. And if you are caller number six at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. If you are looking to get a copy of that, you got to be caller number six, 312-981-7200. Here is Tyrone on WGN. Hi, Tyrone.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, buddy.
I'm looking for, of course, two movies on DVD.
Yes.
Okay. Now, the first one I inquired about a long time ago, I don't know if you remember this, but it starred Daniel Hugh Kelly and Barnard Hill, and it was called Night of Courage.
That's a made-for-TV movie.
I know.
It's very strange because a lot of made-for-TV movies don't get released on DVD, Tyrone, and that one's not out.
Darn it.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, in order, a lot of TV movies that get released on DVD are the ones that have become classics, like your Trilogy of Terror or your Bad Ronald or your Day After, the ones that really caused a stir that became really, really popular. Something like a movie like Night of Courage, which probably aired just the one time and was maybe rerun back in the 80s, didn't cause quite a stir, so they don't prioritize it and put it out on DVD. That's just the way it goes, and it's really bad. It's really upsetting because there's some really terrific TV movies that didn't take off that are not available, and that's one of them.
Okay, now the other one was a really weird Western, and it starred Richard Boone, and it was from the 70s, and it was called Against a Crooked Sky.
Against a Crooked Sky.
Oh, yeah, I actually remember that movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if it's a. Do you know if it's a, if it's available from 1975? It is available. It is available, and also you can watch it on Prime Video. So either way, you can watch it on Prime Video, and you can get it. You can also get it on DVD. Against the Crooked.
Yep. And he had a dog called Barkiller.
Barkiller.
Yep. Because the dog would wipe up at the bar, you know.
Oh, I see. All right. Well, there you go. But it's available, Against the Crooked Sky. All right, Tyrone?
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Take care. There you go.
A one out of two.
Yeah. Well, you know, we got a pretty good track record here.
Yes.
You know, finding these things. And again, that Alien movie that we were talking about. Let's see. 708 area code was without warning. 708 area code says there was a sci-fi epidemic movie in the 70s where bodies disintegrated. I was a kid then. I watched it a lot. Bodies disintegrate. There's a lot of movies where bodies disintegrate.
That's really.
There's a lot. That's one of the things in sci-fi movies that's kind of a regular occurrence is the disintegration of bodies. I don't know if I think we're going to need something a little bit more specific than just bodies disintegrating. So, but yeah, maybe somebody knows. It was from the 70s. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. So, all right. Yeah. How about this? Was The White City ever completed and released, or did it go straight to video?
I think they mean Devil in the White City.
Devil in the
right?
White City, yeah, and it's not out. No.
No, it's I don't know if they've even started filming that
no,
yet.
No. That's just in production or not even like pre-production.
Because that's supposed to be Scorsese and DiCaprio.
Right. Yeah, it's supposed to be. Devil in the White City. Do we have a winner for the third Bohemian Rhapsody?
Yes, that is going to Brad. Chicago Ridge.
Brad in Chicago Ridge is the winner of the third copy of Bohemian Rhapsody, the movie. But Devil in the White City never really even got made. So it's interesting. Some of these, it's interesting what they choose to put out on DVD and what they don't.
Well, remember, Nick. I mean the. Not having your local video store has changed everything. You have a couple of chains left. That's it. If people, let's face it, if you want to rent the movie, the biggest chain in Chicago is Redbox.
Well, my dad works at the Jewels at Irving and Narragansett, and there's a Redbox in front of that Jewel, and he says it's constant.
Oh, it's
like
it's
he says. I mean, he says people up and down, up and down. Constantly.
Oh, Nick, I did a paper on how many videos they rent per minute, per hour, per day, and per week.
Jeez,
I think the number was over a billion videos.
I'm not surprised.
It's because they're everywhere, and that was their whole game plan.
Yeah,
and unfortunately, a regular video store is hard for them to compete. But the difference is the video store has a wide selection.
Yeah.
Plus, they'll special order for you.
Yeah.
Some of these titles people are looking for, you're not going to find in the machine.
Yeah. There's also, you know, it's weird. It's tough. It's tough. I mean, we've seen it all, you know, all the video stores are pretty much extinct. There's only a few left out there. And that's because of the convenience of it. You can, fine. If you want to do the Redbox thing, that's fine. But there are so many people who don't even want to leave their house and they don't have to. You got streaming services, you've got video on demand. You can see a new movie that's out in the theaters in your house if you want to now, and that was not an option, you know, just like 10 years ago.
It was not, and here's another thing: that 39% of all U.S. households have some type of streaming service.
No,
they either have Roku or they have the Amazon Fire,
right?
And that has made a huge difference.
A huge difference, yeah. It made a difference when I got one of my TV, my TV that was like about 10 years old blew up some months ago. Just went, you know how that happens?
Oh, yeah.
Puff of smoke, and then you have that lovely electrical burning smell.
Oh, yes.
And I went out and I got another one, and I got a Roku, and it's a fantastic, you know, it's fantastic.
It's unbelievable to see so many classic movies
that
you wouldn't have watched otherwise.
True. All right, before we break, here's David on WGN. Hey, David.
All right, I was wondering when the new Godzilla is going to be released.
Oh, do we have a date on Godzilla, on the last Godzilla movie, King of Monsters?
It's going to be August 27th.
August 27th, David.
Okay, thank you.
Very cool. I loved it.
Oh, yeah.
Tom and I loved it. Didn't make a lot of money at the box office. Lots of people didn't like it. I thought it was great.
No, I thought it was really good, too.
Yeah.
And if I can interject, Nick, that week is going to be a huge week in video.
Okay.
Because let's
take a break and you come back and we'll do that. We'll get a preview of all the new releases. I guess that October or August 27th is a big, big day.
Yes, it is.
So, all right. And while we're going to commercial here, let's do another giveaway. Let's give away another copy of Bohemian Rhapsody, the final copy of Bohemian Rhapsody. Here we go. Caller number two. Get in there right now. Caller number two, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Caller number two. We'll get our final copy of the movie Bohemian Rhapsody. It'll be yours. All right. We'll take a break. When we come back, Jeff's going to give us a preview of what's coming up in your in the DVD world right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720. Tom, thank you for picking Flash, because it's not even mentioned in the movie Bohemian Rhapsody. There's no mention of Flash Gordon or the music from Flash Gordon in Bohemian Rhapsody, so thank you for correcting that. By the way, coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Jeff Tuckman is here, and we gave away our final copy of the movie Bohemian Rhapsody, and there's the extra-long recreation of the Live Aid performance that was not featured in the movie. There's some other extras on this DVD, too. And this is available, right?
Yes.
Okay, you can get this now. You can buy it if you want to, and that's Bohemian Rhapsody. But Barbara was our final winner, and that's Barbara in Lincolnwood. She is the final winner of Bohemian Rhapsody, and we thank Jeff for bringing it. You always bring really, really cool stuff that the audiences love to win, and you do that every month, and it's always great. We have one more question, and then we want to get to what's coming up for releases. Here's Diane on WGN. Hi, Diane.
Yeah, hi, Nick. This thing has been bothering me for a while. I saw this movie one time, and it was a while ago, and I think the movie's from the 90s.
Okay.
And I don't remember the name of it. It was a haunting movie. And I think it takes place in Tokyo. But it's an American kid. He has a girlfriend, and he's a drug addict. He's into drugs, and he goes out on the town, and he goes in this bathroom stall, and he overdoses, and he dies. And the movie is his life after he dies, and he floats above the city, and he keeps visiting places where he's been and he's familiar with, mm-hmm. his apartment, his girlfriend, and he keeps cycling back to this bathroom stall where he died, and he keeps seeing his body.
Now, Tom, go ahead. Tell her what it is.
So if I'm not mistaken, that should be Enter the Void.
That's exactly right.
Which is...
Oh, my God. Yep. Enter the Void.
Enter the Void.
Oh, my God.
And it's actually from, I want to say, the mid to late 2009?
Yeah. It's a middle 2000s. Yeah, something like that. Something around that time. So, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. But that's, and it's available on DVD, too. But, yeah, that's what the name of the movie is. As soon as you were describing it, Tom and I were looking at each other and just shaking our heads going, yeah, we know what that one is. So,
oh, my God. That movie was so haunting.
Yeah.
And I was like, I couldn't remember what the name of it was. I always wanted to see it again.
Well, you got a chance now. Enter the Void.
So, okay, great.
Thanks,
Thank you
Diana.
Very much.
All right. Take care. Yeah, that was an interesting movie.
Yeah, it was very futuristic, I would say.
It was interesting.
It was interesting. It's available on Blu-ray, by the way, too.
It is, yeah. It's out there. So, yeah. Okay, Jeff, we were talking August 27th is when Godzilla King of Monsters comes out.
Yes.
But you say it's also going to be a big day for other movies.
Yes. The Secret Life of Pets 2, which I like.
Yeah. It did not do nearly as well as the first one. In terms of like office, it really dropped from the first one.
It really did. I thought the trailer wasn't as good as the first one. The first one, the trailer got people.
Yeah.
And they wanted to go see it.
Yeah.
And this one, since you already had that, I still thought it was good. A movie I liked a lot, Rocket Man, comes out the same
day. I like that movie. Don't like Bohemian Rhapsody, but I thought Rocket Man was great, and really great. Like, it was a straight-up fantasy musical.
Yes.
And I like the way they handled that, and the fact that, like, he actually sang all those songs. Like, that's really him, and that's the case.
Oh, that's him.
It's great. Very impressive performance. I think one of the best performances of the year.
I mean, Elton John was on the set almost every day.
Yeah. No,
heavily involved in that.
Well, they perform together now.
Yes.
It's a terrific movie. Rocket Man is a terrific movie.
And also, Chicago Fire season 7, great series.
Get to spot all my friends.
Yeah, and Chicago Med.
Yeah, again, get to spot all my friends. I've got I can't tell you how many people I know who are in who have paychecks signed by Dick Wolf. I can't even tell you how many.
Oh yeah, well they're both driven. And also in August, the Avengers Endgame.
That should sell a few.
I think
a couple copies. Now that movie last week it overtook Avatar. It's the biggest movie of all time.
That's what I'm saying. A lot of people don't realize that, Nick.
It's ridiculous how much money that movie made. It's still in the top 10, if I'm not mistaken. It's still in the top 10 at the box office. There's already, they've already released the date that it's going to come out on Blu-ray and DVD, and it's still playing in the theaters.
August 13th.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's just hard to believe that you say, if someone said to you tomorrow, what's the biggest movie of all time?
Yeah, it's Endgame.
Think about that.
Yeah.
You know, also, terrific series, Mr. Mercedes. I happen to like that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Season 2 will be available that week. I just want to mention a couple titles in September. The Men in Black International. I know there was a lot of hype on it. It had potential. It never quite make it, but I think on DVD it'll be all right. Another one that went nowhere was Ma. That I don't know what they were thinking.
You know, I never got a chance to see it, but I wanted to because I wanted to see. I was intrigued because I wanted to see Octavia Spencer basically drug and kill teenagers. That appealed to me. It absolutely appealed to me. But I never did see it. When's it come out? Because I want to watch it.
September 3rd, but nobody bought it.
I know nobody did. I don't care. I still want to. I don't because when I saw the trailer it tanked after the first week. When I saw the trailer, and I love Octavia Spencer. I want to see her drug and kill teenagers. That's what I want to see.
Also that week, a True Detective season 3. Has a following.
Well,
the 2 and 3 really didn't hype.
Not even remotely close to the first, but the third one was better than the second season.
Yes.
Because of Mahershala Ali. That's the only reason. It wasn't great. But that first season of True Detective still is one of the greatest things that's ever been on TV.
That first season is so far superior. But, like you said, I'm glad you said that 3 is better than 2.
Yeah.
And he was terrific.
Yeah. Both of them were Woody Harrelson and Woody. Yeah. And by the way, you know, speaking of Godzilla, I know you probably know this, but there's a massive Blu-ray release of all the classic Godzilla movies between
54 and 75. Yeah.
And it's Tom and I just both lost our minds. It's going to be this huge, and the artwork is unbelievable on it.
Yeah.
I don't even know. I mean, it's priced at like $125, right?
It's just under $200.
Oh, okay. But well, that's still.
Yeah, it's Criterion Collection Spine number 1000.
There it is. That's the number 1000 Criterion Collection, and it's all the classic Godzilla movies.
Going to be great.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I have a few of them at home. I really like it.
I'm not going to leave the apartment for 4 weeks when that comes out.
Also, I want to mention that same week, Young Sheldon, really well-written series that some people like.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. Also, a movie called Booksmart.
Great movie.
I'm glad you saw that.
Great movie.
What an underrated film.
Terrific.
Nobody went to see.
Olivia Wilde making her directorial debut and doing a great job. And the two leads in that movie
were great.
They're just fantastic.
Absolutely, absolutely great. This is a perfect example of a quality film that people just didn't take the time to go see.
Now you get a chance.
Now you get the chance. And down the road, there's the last season of Big Bang Theory. And in December, obviously, the Game of Thrones
there
season 8. So
everybody,
a lot of great stuff coming out.
If people couldn't get a hold of us, what is your email address if people want a question?
YourMediaMan@AT&T.net.
YourMediaMan@AT&T.net. Thanks again, Jeff. Thanks for bringing down Bohemian Rhapsody. People are having a great time watching that.
Take care, Nick.
All right, Jeff, we'll talk to you next month. The news is coming up after this. All right. And welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It is Friday, so Fly Jams Friday will be coming up, plus all of our regular features. We'll kick it off at 3 o'clock with an extended version of Vic's Picks. We haven't done it in a couple of weeks, so you know, Vic's on this musical journey, so we're going to find out what he's been listening to, and we'll start that at 3 o'clock. And then we got You Big Dummy Straight Out of Context, Nick D. Spies, all coming up on this Friday morning. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. Right now, I would like to welcome to the studio the owner of a terrific restaurant in Lincoln Square Bar and Restaurant called The Bad Apple, and it's Kevin O'Hare. Kevin, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks
good,
for
good,
having
good,
me.
Good, good, good. You can sneak up on the mic a little bit more.
You got it.
There you go. So welcome back here, and so thanks for coming down. We appreciate it. So how long have you – now, you said you've bought the Bad Apple actually just this year.
Yeah, I bought it in January, but I've been going to the Bad Apple for a long time, and that's the key. So,
yeah.
Yeah. It was the best burger I ever had, and when I kind of learned it was for sale, I went crazy and I had to have it.
Well, how long has the Bad Apple been around?
10.5 years now.
Okay,
so, and I'm shooting for another 10+.
Okay, now what did you change when you came in as the owner?
Well, one of the things, actually, because it's this neighborhood sort of, it's been there forever, I vowed not to change anything initially. I made all these promises to everybody, and so while the menu kind of stays the same, basically, we've amped up some of the recipes, we've made some of the presentations a little bit bigger, and we've got some stuff moving forward for a new menu that's just going to blow people out of the water.
That's fantastic. What's your background?
I've been doing this in the restaurant business for 35-plus years.
Really? Where are you from?
I've kind of lived all over. I lived in Ireland in the summers, and I lived in Michigan, and my mother's side of the family is actually from a restaurant background, even though I never had anything to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
They started Zenders of Frankenmuth, which is like this ridiculously big privately owned place in Michigan, but I never thought I'd be in the restaurant business, but once you start, you get sucked in.
You get sucked in. you spent, last name is O'Hare, you spent some time in Ireland. There's a shock.
I did, yeah.
What part of Ireland?
Northern Ireland and Enniskillen.
Oh, okay.
And of course, the Irish are known for their cooking, kind of. You know, so I have no idea how I got this in my genes. They eat dried peas and salmon that's usually overcooked and things like that.
Yeah, I actually, when I went to Ireland, it was the best trip I've ever gone on in my life. I actually had fantastic food while we were in Ireland.
Today is different. You know, when I was growing up,
sure.
It was terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
It was boxes of dried peas, and that was like considered a delicacy back then. But now they have real chefs, and you know, places like Belfast have like these amazing restaurants. restaurants.
Mm-hmm. So tell me about 35 years ago, you said you got into the restaurant business, right? Tell me about the first gig.
Yeah, so, well, I had put myself through college by waiting tables and bartending, and I actually thought I would be Dan Rather, which was one of my first things, which I don't know why I ever picked him to begin with, but maybe back then he was kind of cool.
Yeah.
But then I thought I would be a stockbroker, and so I went to school, and I was studying finance, and once you finish school and you learn you hate something, I actually made up a fake resume. And I became the GM of this little mom-and-pop place, and I didn't know anything about the restaurant business other than being a server. And then just over the years, I kind of became a legitimate restaurant fella. So,
yeah.
But, yeah, you just kind of learn as you go. There's no – you can go to school for it, but mm-hmm. it doesn't really teach you all the things you need to know.
All the years that you've been doing it, what's changed the most in the restaurant business over the years that you've been doing it?
I would tell you that some of the equipment and things like that, all that always changes, but probably more stays the same than changes.
Mm-hmm.
It's always just dealing with the people. You got to take care of your folks because if they're not happy, then the restaurant's not doing well. So, but what I do think is that it's really cool that all these big restaurant concepts that are sort of fading away, and you can pick any number of them that you say these have declared bankruptcy, I think it just paves the way for really cool new restaurants to open in those spaces.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a big win for the restaurant industry as a whole.
Yeah. Now, as a customer at Bad Apple before you bought it, what was it about the place that you like? Can you tell me about like one of the first times you went in there?
Absolutely. Some of the folks there who took care of us, that was the first thing that we noticed. I mean, there's such a really cool vibe there. It's I wouldn't call it a hipster vibe, but it's dark and it's got some red colors in there and it's got some really cool music that plays and the design itself is really neat. But the folks that took care of us, they really knew their beer because I would ask a million questions and the server can answer the questions. They could answer questions, these random ones that I created about Belgian beers or, you know, whatever these weird things that I could come up with. And so the service piece was awesome to begin with, but then when I had the first couple of burgers, I was absolutely blown away.
Mm-hmm.
I was blown away by the quality, by how great everything was, and then when you mix it with the service and the ambiance, I just knew it was for me.
Who was the chef at the time when you started going?
So Craig Fass was the owner at the time, and so through he and a number of the folks in the back of the kitchens, which we still have a number of those folks, they had kind of all created some of the original recipes, and so as I said, the 90% of them are the same, and then we've got new ones that we're sort of working into the menu slowly so we don't scare anybody.
Mm-hmm. Now, you made the Chicago Eaters 20 Essential Chicagoland Burgers.
We did.
Yeah.
We were number three,
as
I recall.
Absolutely. Yes, you were. Number three. How'd you feel about that?
I felt pretty good. You know, the cool thing is that there are some really great places on there. You've got Al Cheval, which was 14, and then I was three, so I felt good about that because they've been ranked like number one in the country. So.
Right.
But it's really nice to be recognized, and I think that'll just kind of continue.
Do you guys have a lot of regulars who come in?
We do. I am actually very surprised at the amount of regulars. I've got a fella, I can't say his name on there, I don't want to embarrass it, but he comes in every single day and eats the same thing. I've got a family that comes in twice a week, they sit at the same table. We've got just so many people that come in regularly, they've got their own seats, they've got their own spots in the bar. Nobody has to take an order for them, we just know exactly what they are, they don't get menus.
That's great.
Yeah. It's a nice, that's not a bad thing to have.
No,
you know?
It's not. Not at all.
We,
and by
we
the
love
way,
it. So.
You guys are located at 4300 North Lincoln Avenue in beautiful Lincoln Square.
We are.
And that's the Bad Apple Bar and Restaurant at 4300 North Lincoln. What is it about, you know, every time I talk to someone who works, you know, in restaurants or the food industry here in Chicago, Chicago is just an incredible food town. What do you think about that, and why do you think Chicago is such a special place for food?
Well, I moved here about 12, 13 years ago, and I think at the time I read something, there were 6,000 restaurants in the greater Chicago area, whatever that area really encompasses.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can get every single culture in Chicago, and that's the coolest thing. If you want real Chinese food, there's real Chinese food.
Yeah.
If you want real Italian food, you can get the fake stuff at this end, but you go down there and there's just some little old man who will cook you the most amazing meal that you've ever had in your life, and it's sort of almost like an unknown place. You can find all these great spots.
Yeah.
But there are so many different unique places, and you can have the best of everything.
Yeah, I agree. It's an incredible food town. Now, the resurgence in popularity in burgers, especially on the high end now. When did that start to happen? Because, you know, remember when burgers were like, you know, like if you were, you know, were a culinary wizard, you would look down upon the burger.
Sure.
But that's not the case now. You know, Michelin star restaurants are serving burgers now and like really amazing ones. What is it about the burger that you think why it made this great comeback.
Well, in the old days, and by that, I guess I don't want to show too much of my age, but 10, 15 years ago, everyone would say, like, burgers and beer, it's never going to go away. But that's just a plain cheeseburger with some bacon on it, and that's okay. But today's burger isn't that burger. You know, I use Pat LaFrieda Beef as an example. He's probably the greatest butcher in the country now. He's the most well-known, and he's well-known for a reason. But you have to have the right bun, and you've got to use the right butter content in your brioche. Otherwise, it's not a good bun.
Right.
And then,
right.
You know, if you're going to put pineapple on it, you don't get it out of a can today. You take a fresh pineapple and you grill it, and it's got to be just the right size and all that stuff. And just the quality today, that's what people appreciate. So I think it's just sort of evolved over time. People started with this basic burger, and now you can serve that, and people still like it.
Yeah.
But if you really want to drive them in and you want to do some really great stuff, you have to be super creative, which is what we try to do.
Well, we're going to go through the menu here on some of the burgers that you have, and because lots of very unique things here. I just love the fact that burgers have been embraced by, you know, the culinary world. It's old school American food. You know what I mean? Everybody likes a burger. Everybody likes a good cheeseburger. And the fact that, like, you know, you're talking about the butcher that you go to, incredible quality in terms of the meat that's used, and then the real creativity of the chefs who are putting these things together. I love the fact that that you can go to a high class restaurant and get a burger.
100%,
absolutely. Yeah.
And you're going to pay for it too.
Yeah, this is absolutely true. Yeah, absolutely true. But I think it's great. So the Bad Apple Bar and Restaurant is at 4300 North Lincoln Avenue. Kevin O'Hara is here. Kevin, hang on. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we want to go through the menu and tell everybody what they can eat at the Bad Apple. All right, it's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we'll be right back. Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here on WGN. We're here on a Friday morning. Fly Jams Friday coming up straight out of context. Nick D Show Spies, You Big Dummy. And we'll kick off the regular features with an extra, extra edition of Vic's Picks, where we go through what Vic Vaughn has been listening to during his musical education, where he is listening to all 100 of the top 100 albums of all time, according to Rolling Stone. And we'll find out what he's been listening to. We're going to hear what he thinks of four albums. We were catching up on some of it. So we're going to hear Vic's thoughts on those four albums coming up after the 3 o'clock news. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. Kevin O'Hare is with us. He is the owner of the Bad Apple Bar and Restaurant in Lincoln Square, 4300 North Lincoln Avenue. Was chosen by Chicago Eaters as one of the third most essential Chicagoland burger. And we welcome Kevin back to the show. Hey, where do you get your inspiration from in some of the creations of the burgers?
Well, sometimes it's just walking around and seeing things that sort of spark your interest. The other day I was walking in a market and there were fresh Georgia peaches and I hadn't seen those yet. Mm-hmm. I didn't even think they were in season yet. So I picked those up, and that's one of the toppings that we use for we have a 45-day dry aged Wagyu.
Yeah.
And that's the topping that we use. So we made Georgia peach jam in-house that morning, and next thing you know, that was on the burger that night.
Everything is made from scratch, including the ketchup, including everything. You pride yourself on that. Every single thing, every item in that kitchen at Bad Apple is made from scratch.
Absolutely. The only thing that we don't make are our buns, but they make them to a very special recipe at a local bakery. And we don't use a mass-producing bakery either. Mm. We use a private one, but we make everything in-house. For our turkey, as an example, we get whole turkeys in, we cut off the breasts, we brine them for 2 days, and then we roast them off before we cut them up, you know, for service that goes in our wraps and some of our sandwiches. Yeah. I don't know anybody who does that.
Oh, that's great. That's what that you know, that signals that that's going to be quality when you take that much time and that much effort just for, you know, one dish.
Yeah, we have pride in everything that we do, but you can really taste the difference. You put our turkey up against somebody else's turkey, it's 100% different.
Yeah. All right, before we get into the menu and talk about some of the stuff that's available at Bad Apple, and you can check out badapplebar.com, by the way, badapplebar.com for all the information, and you can check out the menus and all kinds of cool stuff. What kind of burger do you like? Like, personally, what do you prefer?
So I prefer the basic burger to start. Any place I would ever go, that's what I would get, so you can really taste the meat. So I like lettuce, tomato, pickle, and I like a little bit of bacon on my burger. If you throw in blue cheese or one of the other kind of soft white cheeses, I'm in. Mm-hmm. You've won me over. So Anything with soft white cheese, I'm in. If you add a little spice to it, maybe some peppers or something, I can do that as well.
Yeah, but that's what you prefer.
That's what I prefer.
But at first, though, you want to taste the meat. Just to
I
see
do.
What,
yeah, you want to see the quality of the meat, because sometimes the other stuff can kind of hide it and things like that. So
now the Wagyu Wednesday, tell everybody about that.
All right, so they make this special for us, and so our burgers are only available for us, and Pat does this just kind of as a favor, but he ages our beef for 45 days. He dry ages it, and then we bring in about 15 pounds every Wednesday. And so
how fast do you go through it?
We're normally done by Friday afternoon, Friday evening.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes lately I've been ordering a little bit more to try to get a little bit into Saturday.
Sure, sure.
But I just want to keep it as fresh as possible, you know, since we get it in several times a day from several times a week from New York. But, you know, that's our creativity piece right there.
Right.
We do anything that we want to do with that burger, and that's how we serve it. If you don't want it, it doesn't come any other way.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And so Wednesday, you guys come up with come up with the recipe, and that's the recipe for that week.
And that's the recipe for that week. And so, you know, you figure you get their half-pound burgers, and we do what's called a triple threat as well. So you can get half of one of our sausages, half of a steak sandwich, and half of a Wagyu, which is a 4-ounce Wagyu slider. And then that comes the same way we would serve the regular Wagyu burger.
Oh, that sounds fantastic.
It's a richer, deeper flavor. You know, it's aged, so it brings out the flavor of the beef even more so than before.
My producer, Tom, raves about the Bear's Burger, which is Cutler's Last Stand. Tell everybody what that is.
Yeah, so it's kind of a special burger because we make the cheese sauce, and it takes so long for us to make the cheese sauce. It's a chipotle cheddar cheese sauce, but we use adobo chilies when we make it, and it takes about 4 hours for us to make that sauce. And then we have a smoker in the building, so some restaurants might use liquid smoke or whatever, but we smoke our brisket. It takes about 9 hours, and then it gets brisket on top of that. And then it gets the cheese sauce on top of that. It's served on a really soft pretzel bun, and it's just out of this world.
Sounds fantastic. What about the fig is in?
So the fig is in. That's one of the unique burgers that we do. So we bring in fresh figs, and figs are really fun to play with. People like them. We're considering doing some other stuff, but you know, we cook some of the stuff with some of the beers that we keep in. So we use a Black Hawk Porter in that one, and it's got fig and bacon relish on it. So it's got goat cheese on the top, which we melt a little bit so it's spreadable. So you get this nice sweet and sort of salty, savory flavor all at once with that.
Yeah.
And we have folks all the time that say I've never had fig on a burger, and they're a little cautious if they haven't dined with us before, and then all you hear them talking about is I'm going to get that next time. I'm not going to order anything else.
That's fantastic. And what about the I love this one. Even cowgirls get the blues. You make the onion jam in house.
Oh, we absolutely do. So we use three kinds of onions in there. But,
oh man,
we use local onions only. We only get local produce. We make the onion jam. It's bacon, arugula, and then this Cambazola triple cream cheese that we use is unbelievable. It's soft. That's one of those white cheeses I was just telling you about.
Right, right.
So that's one of my favorites as well.
I was looking on the menu. That's the one that really jumped out at me when I was looking at all the options. I was like, oh well, that just sounds fantastic.
It's probably one of our top three. But the malt vinegar onions that kind of go on top, the onion jam, it's tangy and it's sweet at the same time, and it just adds such a great depth of flavor with the cheese.
What about this one, Just Beyond Thunderdome? Anything Mad Max related, I immediately like. So
you gotta imagine. So we're on the radio, so I can't show you a picture of it,
right.
But you have to imagine something that stands about 8 inches tall. So you've got the burger here, and then you've got some short rib that goes on the top of it, and then you've got these three onion rings that sit on top of that with horseradish sauce that we kind of drizzle over the top, and so you have to figure out how to eat this.
Yeah, thing. It sounds like that, yeah.
The cowardly way is you take the onion rings off and you kind of go at it, but the real way to do it is to kind of figure out how to do it.
Push it
all
down,
in one go.
Try to mash it down.
You got to take advantage of it.
Now, you know, you were talking about how you know, when you do the Wednesday, when the Wagyu comes in on Wednesday, how many people you guys just like? Everybody get in the kitchen and throw out ideas? Is that...
Yeah, so we do a little combination. So it's usually we try to get about a week ahead of it, and we look for seasonal ingredients. So maybe something's just coming out, or maybe somebody was just at a market. I spend a lot of time being in markets and looking at fresh produce and things.
Yeah.
And so somebody will throw out an idea during the week, and we see what other people are doing sometimes, and maybe we mimic it, but we make it a little bit better, but... You know, it's interesting to try really creative things that you wouldn't think. You know, who puts peaches on a burger?
Right.
Well, we would, because we know what it's going to taste like if you do it right.
Right.
You make a fresh house-made jam, and then you add some onions to it that you saute it, and then maybe add some spice, which is what we did last time.
Yeah.
It just becomes this sort of creative masterpiece. But we have a whole group of people who kind of contribute to it.
Yeah. The Southern Dandy. Tell me about that one.
So the Southern Dandy, it is Spanish sweet onions, and that's important. And then, so this is an important piece of that. We use buckboard molasses bacon. That's what our menu says. And so we make that in-house from scratch. We take whole pork loins, we cut them down, and then we make our own cure in-house. So it's got a little bit of water, of course, because you have to have that for the cure. It's got molasses, and then we add some of the cure number one, and we do some things. And it's got to sit for 2 weeks in this cure.
Wow.
And then, you know, it really intensifies the flavor. It pulls some of the moisture out. It adds some sweetness to the meat, and it gets all inside. And then we smoke it for about 6 hours afterwards.
Jeez.
And then once you slice it, it just... my son works at the restaurant, and he just started working at the beginning of the summer, and all he talks about is buckboard bacon.
Yeah.
He goes in the back, he tries to steal a piece of buckboard bacon, he orders a sandwich, he's like, can I have double buckboard on that?
Yeah, exactly. All right, now you guys do have a veggie option, a veggie burger option.
We do. Yeah. We have, the neighborhood itself has lots of vegetarians and people with dietary restrictions or people trying to eat a certain way, and so we've got two things. We make a veggie meatball, which I'm telling you, if I didn't tell you it was a veggie meatball, you would think that it was meat.
Mm-hmm.
And then we make the Strange Famous, which is mushroom, seitan, chickpea, and corn. And so we make it into a burger. And I am not a veggie burger guy by any means, but I think it's great.
Yeah. Monday through Wednesday, you guys are open at 4. You open at 4:30. The kitchen closes at 11. And then Thursday through Sunday, you open at 11:30 a.m., you know, so you can get lunch. And the kitchen on Friday and Saturday closes at 1 a.m. But the bar is always open until 2.
The bar is always open until 2. And we've got an outside patio as well. So there's some rules that we can't stay open past 10 o'clock on the weekdays and 11. But the outside patio is open all for lunch on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So it's a great spot out there.
There you go. 4300 North Lincoln Avenue, 773-360-8406. 773-360-8406 if you have any questions. Kevin, real pleasure to meet you, man. You're doing a great job over there at the Bad Apple, and it's nice that, you know, it's a place that you used to go to that you love, and you're keeping it going.
Yeah, thanks for so much. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. I got to get up there someday soon to the Bad Apple. So Bad Apple Bar and Grill, bar and restaurant at 4300 North Lincoln Avenue. There you go. Kevin, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll take a break here, and we got the news coming up right after that. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5 a.m. It's Friday. That means all the regular Friday features are going to start, and we'll kick off with an extra version of Vic's Picks coming up after the 3 o'clock news. And then we've got Nick D Show Spy, Straight Out of Context, and You Big Dummy, and of course, Fly Jams Friday. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for talk, text, and for Fly Jams requests. All right, so it's a big weekend for Quentin Tarantino fans. He's got a new movie that has just been released, and it's called Once Upon a Time in Hollywood with Brad Pitt, Leonardo DiCaprio, Margot Robbie, Al Pacino. And Tom has seen it, saw it last night at the yesterday at the Music Box Theater in 70mm, and you give it a pretty big thumbs up.
Yeah, especially for Quentin Tarantino fans. It's not gonna, if you don't like Quentin Tarantino, don't go see this movie because it's not gonna change your mind at all.
Okay. Well, in honor of that, Screen Crush put together a list here of the 25 best Quentin Tarantino characters, and they've ranked them. So they just included the ones that he directed. So like
Correct,
nobody from True Romance and nobody from Dusk Till Dawn.
No, you won't get QT as Seth Gecko, unfortunately.
Yeah. So, hey, you've seen the movie Sleep With Me, right?
Yeah, when he does the bit about Top Gun.
Yeah. I actually really like that movie a lot. But yeah, the whole Top Gun thing is ridiculous because it's talking
insane.
About Top Gun. You know, well, ride your tail anytime.
Yeah.
But anyway, so the best Quentin Tarantino characters. Now, I have some offbeat choices here that, of course, are not on the list.
Well, you told me one the other day that I was shocked but very excited to hear.
One of my favorite characters in any Quentin Tarantino movie is played by the great Larry Bishop, who has done so many awesome, crazy B-movies, and he's the son of Joey Bishop. He plays the strip club owner in Kill Bill 2. That scene, I love. It's actually my favorite scene in that entire movie. Is that scene with
really?
Oh my god!
Between him and Bud.
I love that scene so much. I just, you know, when he's like, "You're about as useful." I can't say what he says, but you know, he's pointing to the calendar, telling him to take his hat off. Yeah, so he's one of my favorite. He's a peripheral character, obviously. You know, he's only in one scene, you know, in a movie that's 4 hours long, and he's only in the one scene. But he's so good. He's one of my favorites. I don't know. You know who else I really love? Not on this list. I love Eric Stoltz in Pulp Fiction.
Oh yeah, he's so funny.
He's hilarious. And so is Roseanne Arquette. Both of them are really great.
Yeah,
but I really love Eric Stoltz. In you know, I especially love him when he's watching The Stooges and he's eating Fruit Brute.
When he's selling John Travolta heroin, I'll take the Pepsi challenge.
Yeah, he's hilarious in it. He's great in it. But there are a lot of I guess these are all like sort of obviously this list consists of major characters. Now, who would you have chosen?
Who
are some of your favorites?
I honestly think, I don't know if he's ever done a character really more unique and essentially Quentin Tarantino than Colonel Hans Landa from Inglourious Basterds. Mm. It is a performance of a lifetime for Christoph Waltz. Literally nobody else could have ever played that role. Apparently DiCaprio almost played Hans Landa.
Is that right?
Which would have made no sense. This is a role that will make you love a Nazi, which is really unsettling, but it's intense and funny and truly unique. I think Colonel Hans Landa is one of the most unique characters ever put to page.
Going back to Pulp Fiction really quickly, because it's my favorite. It's my favorite Tarantino movie, and I think my favorite characters are in that movie.
Same.
I love Tim Roth and Amanda Plummer. I love Honey Bunny and Pumpkin. I love them. And Tim Roth is one of my favorite actors. Mr. Orange, I loved him in that. I loved him in Hateful Eight. I love him in I love him in everything. I think he's just fantastic. But I particularly like Honey Bunny and Pumpkin very much. And Amanda Plummer's a nut, you know, and just but there are so many great characters in that movie. You can't say, Vincent and Jules. I mean, what can you say about those guys?
Iconic.
It's amazing. That's my favorite. But there are a lot of other characters that I really like. So here's what they say. Screen Crush. If you guys want to jump in, who are your favorite characters from all of the Quentin Tarantino movies? Who are your favorites? 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. So they pick Sergeant Donnie Donowitz in Inglourious Basterds. My problem with that is that it's Eli Roth. That's my problem.
I know, but he's so funny.
I have a hard time getting over the fact that it's Eli Roth because he's such a douchebag. And
I guess so.
I wish somebody else had played the part. I like the part. I think, he's fine. You know what I mean? He's fine.
I find him in Inglourious Basterds to be doing the best that he's.
Yeah,
he's supposed to be totally over the top and annoying, but I can't help but laugh when he does the Teddy Baseball.
Yeah,
doing the Bostonian thing. It's
are
so
you
funny.
Are you at all? How do you feel? Because you know what people find very annoying is the smash cut at the end of Inglourious Basterds with basically Brad Pitt looking in the camera saying this could be my masterpiece, and then boom, Quentin Tarantino's name pops up on the screen.
Love it. Some people really hate it. They think it's arrogant.
Yep.
I think it's just a big joke. It's just, this is a movie that Quentin Tarantino worked on for like 10 years.
Yeah.
Took him 10 years to get this movie made. Almost didn't happen.
Well, he's not known for, for being
subtle.
Subtle.
Yeah.
He's also not known for not having an ego and a high opinion of himself.
Yeah.
Which is why I've often said this. He should just shut up and make movies. Because he makes me nuts when I see him talking. And he just, But that, as soon as it ended, I went, come on.
Love it. I just, it takes brass, brass something.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. They also, number 24 here is Mr. Orange from Reservoir Dogs. I think she'd be higher. because it's,
I'd probably hire
Tim Roth. I love Tim Roth. Again, I don't know, man. Mr. White and Reservoir Dogs, number 23. Again, that's another one that I wish would be higher because I.
You know, I mean, it's Harvey Keitel.
It's Harvey Keitel. Let's go get a taco.
You're not going to die.
22, Aldo Rain in Inglourious Basterds. Brad Pitt's hilarious.
It's
a very funny performance. Here's another one that I really love. Daryl Hannah in Kill Bill. As Ellie Driver, I love her in that movie, mm-hmm. and I love that character. That's one of my favorite characters, Tarantino characters. Absolutely.
Yeah, and he has. I love the way that he has, with taking actors who have been out of the public consciousness for a long time. Daryl Hannah really hadn't been talked about since like the 80s, really. Maybe a little bit in the 90s, and then he just said, "Well, I'm going to build this character around you."
Yeah.
And
she's great in it.
Yeah, and I think it was Feinberg that said yesterday, he pointed towards that and said, you know, for Rucker Hauer, how great would it have been to see Rucker Hauer in a QT movie? Yeah. I think it would have been nuts.
Number 20, Marcellus Wallace from Pulp Fiction. Ving Rhames.
What do you think is behind his Band-Aid?
I don't know. A barcode. I don't know.
People always theorize that it's the mark of the devil.
Right, exactly. I mean, there's so many of that goofy stuff. Steven from Django Unchained. God, I hated that character. I hated him. Oh, you were supposed to.
Yeah, he was a total heel.
Oh my God. I mean, he made me nuts. And I guess that's a testament to how good Samuel Jackson is in that movie. But he made me nuts. Like, I was like, man, come on. You know, I just wanted to slap him. I was like, come on, man. Butch in Pulp Fiction. I don't know if I'd include the Bruce Willis character from Pulp Fiction in the best characters.
No, he's a little, I mean, he does a good job. He does a very good job. I like his section of the movie, but it's, I don't think him as a character is really all that much fun to watch.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the whole basement sequence is just like ridiculous. But yeah, I mean, it was fine. See, for me here, number 17, this is too low. Stuntman Mike and Death Proof. That's too low.
Oh, he's Kurt Russell. Scenery.
Yeah. Now, is he his brother in the Once Upon a Time? Is it?
They do not explicitly state who he's supposed to be.
He is a stuntman, though.
He is a stuntman. My guess is that it's an obvious nod to Death Proof, and I hope it's not giving away too much. But Zoe Bell is in the movie, which you could have expected, and she plays a stunt woman.
Yeah.
And it's like maybe she's supposed to be the mom or something of Zoe Bell's character in Death Proof.
Yeah. Well, she's Zoe Bell in Death Proof.
Yeah.
That's like.
That's the best part. I love Zoe Bell.
She's fantastic.
She's so good.
She's fantastic. But I think Stuntman Mike's too low, man.
Yeah.
I mean, he's Kurt Russell. So like immediately he gets bumped a bunch of notches simply because he's Kurt Russell.
And then I save him for my big drink, a virgin pina colada.
He's fantastic. Stuntman Mike. I love that character. And then next is Zoe Bell from Death Proof.
Criminally underrated movie, if you ask me.
Yeah, it is. I think it's amazing. I mean, the actual like version that the full version that he made is really, really terrific. And you know, for me, when I saw Grindhouse, and like for me, Planet Terror was a chore to sit through, and I was just like, oh god.
I get a kick out of it, but it's definitely the weaker half.
I mean, what I said when I reviewed it was, you know, like Robert Rodriguez was out on a lark here. Tarantino made a real movie. Like Quentin Tarantino made a made a really good cinematic film. Calvin Candy, Django Unchained. I like I said before, I think it's the best performance in the movie.
Yeah,
I think DiCaprio is unbelievable in that movie.
It's certainly the most memorable.
Yeah.
People are doing a good job in that movie, but Leonardo DiCaprio is just on a different level. He's full tilt.
Absolutely. I mean, then he slices himself open and just keeps going and puts the blood all over Kerry Washington.
Oh, God, I can't even imagine having to deal with that. I can't even imagine.
It's fantastic, though. Great stuff. All right, let's take a break, and we've got more of the best Quentin Tarantino characters ever. Do you have some favorites from your favorite Quentin Tarantino movies in honor of the release of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood? 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Our regular features begin after 3 o'clock with a full-on extra version of Vic's Picks coming up right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. I'm telling you it's not a trick. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. I hear that, I immediately just start laughing. Because the ending of Death Proof is just ridiculous. And by the way, when the tables turn on Stuntman Mike, he's so hilarious.
He's drinking the whiskey and then pouring it into his arm. He's crying.
Hilarious. I mean, ridiculously funny. My favorite moment, though, is like when they think that Zoe's fallen off the car, off the front of the car, and then she pops up. Quentin Tarantino released a new movie. Tom loved it. I'm seeing it tomorrow with my folks, and we'll review it on Monday morning with Eric and Steve. So in honor of that, you know, they put out a list here of the best Quentin Tarantino characters of all time. And also, by the way, coming up, we got Vic Vaughn in the stories that matter in the Northwestern Medicine newsroom. All right, we got some texts coming in. Chris in Elk Grove says one of my favorite characters is Q from Q is Jungle Julia from Death Proof.
Yeah, Jungle Julia. Well, I love that she gets the theme from Blowout.
Yeah,
which is so great.
Yeah. Absolutely. 224 area code says Jules and Vincent are the best. That's hard to argue, man.
It really is.
I mean, both of them are so good in that movie, and they're so good together. And like the chemistry between the two of them, and I understand that Pitt and DiCaprio have that in spades in the new movie.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
Dan Long, our engineer, also saw the movie, mm-hmm. and he said that they are unbelievable together. I mean, those are two of the best, man, you know? Major Marquis Warren from Hateful Eight, Samuel L. Jackson. He's great. He's great in that movie. There's a lot of great characters in that movie. Shauna from Inglourious Bastards.
Yeah. She gets them good.
We get the whole cat people thing going in that one, too.
Yeah.
here's your favorite, coming in at number 12, Hans Landa.
I don't know how that's not in the top five. I really do not know.
Because
he is just something else.
He's a terrific character. Mr. Pink, I'm top five for me.
Am I the only professional?
I love Buscemi in that movie. I think everybody's good in that movie, but Buscemi, man, I don't know. And if he didn't run out the front door, and get shot in a hail of bullets from the cops, he would have lived. He was the only guy that got away. What a weasel. He's underneath the ramp.
Oh, totally.
and he shoots Chris Penn. Like, everybody's like, how do you, who shot who? What are you talking about?
Yeah. Speaking of which, I don't think Nice Guy's on there. Nice Guy Eddie.
No, he's not.
That's
great.
A shame.
Yeah, God, he's good.
Chris Penn. Chris Penn. Gone so soon.
Yeah, I know. I know. 10, Vincent Vega. Shouldn't he be in the top five, don't you think?
Vincent Vega. Yeah. I mean, probably.
9, Bill in Kill Bill. Well, it's because it's David Carradine, man.
Remarkable voice.
Now, you know I have a samurai sword signed by David Carradine and Michael Madsen, right?
You told me about this, and I got very upset. I got a pure jealous rage. Because it's unbelievable that you own that. It's really just...
Well, listen, it was just because Michael Madsen was loaded. That's the when he was on the air with
me. There you
go. That's what it was.
By the way, again, I don't want to give things away. He does appear. You get a lot of appearances from QT collaborators.
Yeah.
Madsen does appear.
Okay,
for
good.
A little bit.
Good. His sister, by the way, at Flashback next week.
Virginia Madsen.
Oh, man. I'm bringing my sideways poster.
Are you going to bark all day, little bunny?
Yeah. All right. Winston Wolfe from Pulp Fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Legendary.
Solves problems.
I've always wondered. when I watch Pulp Fiction, this is one of the things that come. What the hell kind of party is he at like 7 o'clock in the morning?
I don't know.
Like with a tux on Fulton. And everybody's... like what world is that that he...
Beautiful long-legged redhead with him. Just what is...
Then he drives off with Julia Sweeney when everything is said and done.
Remarkable.
That's because Q was dating Julia Sweeney at the time. That's why he put her in the movie. Oren from Kill Bill.
Oren Ishii.
Yeah, Oren Ishii. Yeah, Lucy Liu cutting everybody up.
Yeah, going full Lady Snowblood.
Yeah. Daisy from Hateful Eight. I love Jennifer Jason Leigh in that movie.
She's, she is all... all vinegar.
Yeah.
She is just mean.
I got to say, I think it's the best performance in the movie. I think Jennifer Jason Leigh is the best performance.
I really enjoy her. I think she's, probably the best.
Yeah. And she's one of my favorite actresses on the planet.
I feel bad for her because she seems to keep showing up in movies where people just beat the crap out of her.
Oh, that's been her MO for years.
Yeah.
I mean, we were talking about the movies that she made with Rutger Hauer, Flesh and Blood. He brutalized her in that movie and then ripped her apart between a semi and a trailer. No. That's Jennifer Jason Leigh takes the tough roles, man. She does. She's not afraid. She's got one of the reasons I love her so much. There's no fear in Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Oh no,
she will take on any role.
And I wonder if that's why Quentin picked her specifically.
I'm sure
she knows. He knows that she's got this history of getting beat up on film.
There's absolutely no question about it. Django and Django Unchained. I think that's too high.
Well, I mean, Jamie Foxx is smooth as all hell.
Yeah.
And I think the movie reflects worse than the character does. Because the character's really fun. It's just that he's stuck in a movie that's overly long and doesn't make him as slick. He's not as slick as he is.
This is right where it should be. Number four, Jackie Brown and Jackie Brown. But I got to say, not including Robert Forrester on this list from Jackie Brown is a big mistake. Because Robert Forrester is amazing in that movie.
Yeah.
And his character is fantastic. It's a beautifully played character.
And I never knew that Jackie Brown is the only movie Quentin Tarantino's directed that isn't based on his own material.
No, yeah, it's Rum Punch.
And it's so
it's amazing. Great. It's a great movie. Really underrated, too. And everybody in it is great. De Niro's great. And Bridget Fonda. Where the hell is Bridget Fonda now? She's fantastic in it.
True.
Mia Wallace from Pulp Fiction. Uma Thurman's so good in that. And then, speaking of Uma Thurman, The Bride comes in at number two, which that makes sense. And then number one, they picked Jules from Pulp Fiction as the number one Quentin Tarantino character, and I guess that makes sense.
He's got one of the best monologues that QT's ever written.
Yeah,
I mean the whole Ezekiel 25:17, not actually a Bible verse,
but it's it's a great, it's like the the quintessential Samuel L. Jackson performance for most people.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite Samuel L. Jackson performance happens to be in 187, but that's a whole different thing right there. But I guess that makes sense. Jules number one.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
And honestly, I think Rick Dalton and Cliff are from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood will probably show up on that list if they ever reorganize it. Yeah, because it's crazy how much chemistry those two have.
Yeah.
And to think that I think they've been in a movie together before, but in the same way that De Niro and Pacino they were both in The Godfather Part II, but they weren't acting with each other.
Right. All right, well, there you go. We're going to take a break. The news is coming up. And then after the news, we'll jump into our regular features with an extra Vic's Picks. We're going to hear about four albums that Vic has been listening to, and he'll give us his thoughts on that. And that's coming up after the news, which is coming up next.
Seems this world got you down. You're feeling bad, bad, racial brown. Well, open your eyes, girl. Look at me.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's Friday morning. That means all of our regular features. Fly Jams Friday, and that's when DJ Luscious Hushus shows up and starts playing all the Fly Jams, R&B, soul, all that really cool stuff, funky stuff for your weekend. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We also have You Big Dummy. That's when we read real news stories of real dumb people doing real dumb stuff. And then we vote on who's the biggest dummy. Tom votes, I vote, and then you call in at 312-981-7200. First person through gets to be the third vote for dummy news stories. That's you, big dummy. And then, of course, Straight Out of Context. Straight Out of Context is when you listen to this radio station 24/7, and whenever anybody at any time says something that you can pull out of context and it sounds a little bit dirty, it makes you giggle, jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. Same thing goes through with Nick D Show Spies. That's when you listen to this station 24/7. And whenever anybody mentions me in any capacity, we want to know about it. You're a spy. Jot it all down and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. That's all regular stuff coming up. But let's kick it off with our regular feature. We have a special extended version because we haven't done it in a couple of weeks of Vic's Picks. For those of you who might not know, Vic was not happy with his musical knowledge because it was non-existent. So he decided that he was going to go through and listen to every single album on the top 100 albums of all time, according to Rolling Stone. And he's making that journey right now. And this morning, we're going to have Vic talk about four of the albums that he's been listening to. And let's start it off.
One, Vic Vaughn. It's Vic's Picks on the Nick DiGilio Show.
Well, the rain there it is. All right. As we make our way through the, Vic makes his way through the top 100 albums of all time, according to Rolling Stone. All right, Vic. Hi, buddy.
Hey, hey.
Okay, where do you want to start?
Number 27 on the list, The Joshua Tree by U2. Mm. This is released in 1982. As usual, Nick, while I was listening, I was doing a little research, trying to learn a little about a bit about these bands and albums. So, of course, U2 from Ireland. I knew that. Joshua Tree's their fifth studio album. I love the entire album. I love the whole thing. It's got 11 songs, four of which I knew. You know, it was a huge hit, success.
Yeah.
And it's later, too, 1982.
No, so, 87. It's 87.
Is it? Oh,
yeah.
My bad.
87, yeah.
But, yeah, so getting into the area, you know, where I started listening to music a little bit more. But 11 songs, again, highly commercial, highly successful album. It's got a little under an hour, 50 minutes. But I've always loved the first three songs on this album. Always love those. Track one, Where the Streets Have No Name. I didn't actually know what this was about, as I learned. I thought it was about something else. This was new to me, but I read that Bono wrote about it, saying that there's this saying in Belfast that I guess the saying goes, you can guess a person's religion and income there if you know what street they live on. So that's,
yeah, kind of, yeah, that's true.
Very true.
That's
in Belfast, very
yeah,
true.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. Yeah, no yeah, question so, about it.
And in other places in the world, I guess, too. But that's what he says he wrote the song about. So track two, I still haven't found what I'm looking for. Now, I wanted to stop there quickly and say, because this is a good song to use as an example of what I'm about to say, but I really wanted to learn something. When I saw U2 come up on the list, I knew right away I wanted to dig into you know, their sound, their guitar sound. And I did. And it has to do with U2's lead guitarist.
The Edge.
His sound. I knew that he had his own sound. Even I knew that. But I didn't know really much about him. I didn't know he was called The Edge, for example. That's his nickname. His stage name is David Howell Evans. But and yeah, he crafted his own style, and he became U2's signature sound.
He uses a lot of what we call the digital delay.
Yeah, I learned about that.
There's a pedal that you can hit, and he's got a lot of pedals he's got a lot of effects that he puts on that guitar. But the biggest of which is he's very heavily into the digital delay.
Yeah.
Now, have either of you heard of a film called It Might Get Loud?
Oh. Yeah.
I think it's Davis Guggenheim.
Yeah, no, it's great.
And Vic, I think you would be particularly interested in this because it's a pretty short documentary where they take The Edge, Jack White and Jimmy Page, and they just kind of put them all into a room, and they have more or less have a jam session. But it's also about their philosophical approaches to playing the guitar, a little bit about their history playing the guitar, and it's really interesting to see how their dynamics come out, especially between The Edge and Jack White, because The Edge uses so many effects. He's got like literal crates of effects, and he's got a special tech that takes care of all that for him. Meanwhile, Jack White takes a very traditionalist approach. He likes guitars that are broken, dirty, don't work as well. So it's really interesting to see how they approach it.
Made from scratch with stuff that was lying around his apartment.
Right.
I've been reading about all three of those guys you mentioned, and I will definitely watch
that.
Yeah,
it's a great movie.
Right up my alley with what I'm into right now.
It's,
so.
It's funny, too, because like you know, where The Edge plays, because they're shown separately, you know, and they're like Jimmy Page is like in his castle, and you know they're like in like three different places, but The Edge is in Dublin, and where he was playing is right outside where we stayed. Like when we were in Dublin, I was like, oh, it was like The Edge is playing right there. So that was a lot of fun. But yeah, it Mike It Loud is a really terrific guitar documentary. Now, what was the other song? The third song? The first three, and then there was the third one?
With or Without You, track three.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, that was, you know, my favorite song on this album. I think so.
A huge hit, too.
Yeah, big. Oh, yeah. All three of those top three were big hits. Those were the ones I mainly knew from this. And then I, you know, we'll get into the next ones. But I also found out that I thought was cool to me was that The Edge was one of the founders of the band. I didn't really know the history of the band. So, so Edge, you know, starts the band with a friend of his in high school, Larry Mullen Jr., the drummer.
Yep. They were kids, man.
Yeah,
they were kids.
Yeah. High school. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Track three, With or Without You. Yeah, that, again, my favorite song on this album, I think, and also a very important song to the success of this entire album. This is something I really found interesting because they were having some problems getting this song to work. The Edge didn't like it initially, but they finally got it to work in the studio, and U2 now considers it like a breakthrough moment because they said for the Joshua Tree, with the problems they were having, apparently they were pretty discouraged, and they were kind of creatively running on empty, I guess, until they figured out how to get the composition of this song right, and then it just took off the rest of the album. So it was an important album for this or song for this album.
All right, here we go. Let's hear it.
Oh yeah,
yeah. This was the album that you know. I mean, War was popular. It had New Year's Day on it. Unforgettable Fire was also a pretty popular record. But this one, this is the one that just put them through the roof.
Stratospheric,
absolutely. Yeah, it changed their career completely, and they became like massively huge. After this album, my favorite song on Joshua Tree is "Bullet the Blue Sky."
Oh, we're getting
that's yes,
absolutely one of my favorite.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, it's one of my favorite U2 songs of all time. And whenever they do it live, and they do it live every single time I've seen U2 since Joshua Tree came out, they do "Bullet the Blue Sky" live, and it's always the best song of the set. It's always the best song of the set.
I wonder if it's because how passionate he is about what's behind that song.
Oh yeah.
He felt really strongly. It's a protest song. And he felt really strongly after visiting Nicaragua with his wife about the U.S. involvement there. U.S. military support for anti-Soviet ops there.
What was funny is that there was a period of time after Joshua Tree came out, Vic, when they made this movie called Rattle and Hum. And it is the most pompous and pretentious and annoying that U2 had ever been. Because after the Joshua Tree reached all this, you know, biblical levels of success, they'll be the first to admit it, Bono will be the first to admit it, that they took it way to their heads and they became unbelievably pompous. And I can't watch Rattle and Hum. It makes me crazy. But they were interviewing them about the guitar solo in "Bullet the Blue Sky," and Bono said this, and I'm not kidding. Bono said this: "I told The Edge to to put El Salvador through his amplifier.
I read that.
And I was like, shut up.
I read that.
But great song. Yeah. I don't care. It's,
yeah, it's an amazing,
phenomenal
song.
Yeah, awesome. I knew that one a little bit. Not as well as the top three, but yeah, I had heard it. And but it was nice to learn a little bit more about it. Track five, Running to Stand Still. It's now number one.
God, there's a lot of good songs on this album.
This one, though, this one is now my new number one under the category songs about drugs.
Yeah.
this song, it's about a heroin addicted couple in Dublin. That's not funny, but actually, yeah. but the quote, songs about drugs category, unquote, that I keep hearing about on my favorite lists of social media. It strikes me as funny.
Have you heard Neil Young's Needle in the Damage Done?
I did listen to a Neil Young album.
Did you listen to it? Wasn't Decade? No, you didn't listen to Decade, did
no,
you?
No,
No, but, well, anyway, Needle in the Damage Done is one of the, mm-hmm. I mean, it's on that same level as Running.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but it's a I mean, that's a big category of songs about drugs.
Yeah,
but this
yeah.
One,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the lyrics actually kill me in this song, though. And the music, apparently they came up with it during a single studio session. It was their producer, Daniel Lanois, Canadian, mm-hmm. Legend, who I'm now learning about as well, just now, a little late to the game, but I'm learning a lot about him. But he came up with the melody. Yeah, it's a lovely ballad, actually, I think, Running to Stand Still.
Yeah.
I'll mention here the album's other producer, Britain's Brian Eno. We should, because I learned a lot about him from another album I listened to a few weeks ago. But he's
a legend.
Yeah. Yeah,
just wait till you get into the ambient stuff with him.
Yeah, I know. I have. Awesome. I started listening to. I listened to one of his albums that he put out on his own. Eno, I can't remember the name. It's something like Music for Airports or something.
Yeah,
like that.
That's exactly what it is. Music for Airports.
Yeah, he's definitely. Yeah, he definitely had a big impact on U2 as well. Another album that he worked on as well. Track six, Red Hill Mining Town. It's also a protest related song, but I thought a very pretty song too as well. It's about coal miners, their families back in the mid 80s. Basically, the British government closed a bunch of coal mines, and it really messed their lives up. These coal miners. There was a lot of violent protests. There was deaths. I mean, it was bad. But the song looks at how that impacted their lives. And you know, I read that, in fact, nearly became the album's second single. It is a very good song, too, if you're not even into protest songs. It's a very good song. It almost became their second single, but I still haven't found what I'm looking for. Bumped it. So
yeah. All right. Yeah. We got a break, Vic. But overall, you love the album, then?
Yeah, I had so much fun listening to this album. I listened to it at least four times for this episode.
Wow,
I loved
there you
it.
Go. Excellent. Okay, so that's Joshua Tree. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we got another album that Vic's been listening to that we'll jump into on Vic's Picks. Welcome back, everybody. We're in the middle of Vic's Picks, and Vic, obviously, that's from your next pick.
Yeah, number 26, Rumors by Fleetwood Mac, released in 1977, I think.
Yes.
12 songs.
Yes.
It's just under 40 minutes long, this whole entire album, but it was fun because I thought I was going to be listening to a lot of new music, and I knew a lot of the songs on this album. This was like kind of coming out of amnesia.
Yeah.
I didn't realize, because I looked at the list, I didn't really recognize any of the song names, but I knew a lot of them.
Yeah, well, I mean, Rumors was, it's hard to describe how big that album was when it came out. And it was one of those albums from the 70s that if the FBI busted in your house and looked at your record collection and you didn't own Rumors, they could throw you in jail.
Yeah.
That's pretty much like almost every song on that record became a hit. It was massive hit.
Right. And a Grammy for Album of the Year the year after it was released. But I've never played a Fleetwood Mac record in my entire life. I've never listened to an entire album through all the way. So that was new for me. And I love this album. So for this segment, there's too much to cover, but suffice it to say, I understand this is a band with a very interesting history as well. I tried to get into learning more about the band, and it's one of the more complicated ones because a lot of bands get started and then they're the same members all the way through. There was a lot of change and a lot of things that happened with this band, but let's just stick with the music. Track one, Secondhand News. I didn't know it. It's catchy. I thought it was cool when I read that Lindsey Buckingham, he wrote it, and he didn't like what he called the marching band that feel that it originally had, because he'd heard Jive Talkin' by the Bee Gees and he wanted to make a more disco-y song. So I thought that was kind of funny. Track two, Dreams. Whoa. The song's opening, it kind of just took me back to kind of another time. It was like this song to me was just like a portal back in time. Amazing, just an amazing song. I'd love to play some of this and just let it do the talking for me. But track three, Never Going Back Again. I didn't recognize the name, but it was so nice to hear this song again. Such a great guitar riff, I thought. Very recognizable melody, I think. A lot of people would know that song, obviously. But to me, I loved track three. Track four, Don't Stop. I think this is probably just classic Fleetwood Mac. I think most people have heard that one. I knew that one. Track five, Go Your Own Way. Another huge hit for them, but I did learn something about the Rumors album. when I was reading that none of the instruments on Go Your Own Way were recorded live together. They used overdubbing. Then I read, I kept reading about that and found out that the entire album is pretty much produced that way. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Also, just the personal stories. Everybody was sleeping with everybody in that band. Everybody was sleeping with everybody in that band.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was alluding to in the beginning.
Yeah.
There's a lot of history with the members of this band.
Yeah.
And I think you can see a lot of their songs kind of reflected. I don't know if
it was on purpose.
Absolutely. I don't know if they wrote them about the breakups and the changes.
Yes, they did.
Okay.
Go Your Own Way is written, written about Lindsey Buckingham and Stevie Nicks.
Well, and I didn't know if that was the case, but I certainly thought, well, that's coincidental. Track six, Songbird. Holy, that one caught me off guard because I think it's beautiful. It's a very touching song. That was a very touching song to me. Mm-hmm. We'll leave it at that. Beautiful song. Track seven, The Chain. This, to me, is a jam. I hadn't heard a song quite like this, in my opinion, since I've been listening to all these albums, which is about 75 now. And then I read about it and learned it's kind of a compilation of a bunch of stuff that they had originally cut out.
That's my favorite song on the album.
Is it?
Yeah. Here, we got a little bit of it here. Great song.
Isn't it a jam? I love it.
And that's sort of a standby on FM rock radio. As many of the songs are.
Mm-hmm. I think I also read that's the only song on this album that can be attributed to every single member at the band at the time when this was released in 1977.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. What else?
Let's see. What am I on? Track eight. Here's another title I didn't recognize by name. You Make Loving Fun. And I was just...
That's the Christy McVie song on the album.
Yeah. Is that
not a fan?
The only one?
No, I like it.
Okay.
No, I like it. But one of the reasons why the tone is a lot different is because it's Christy McVie.
Yeah.
Who was probably the most positive person in the band.
It's just remarkable. I don't know how that's...
Yeah.
I can't believe I managed to catch them on tour when they were all actually still together.
That's pretty amazing.
She had just come back after a long time of not being in the band.
A lot of drama in that band.
A lot of drama. Track nine, I Don't Want to Know. I didn't know that song. I really like the acoustic guitar, though, especially in the beginning. It sounds to me, it sounds like you're right there, like a foot away, like your ear is at the sound hole. I mean, it's really clear. And crisp, the acoustics in the beginning of that song. Very good. Track 10, Gold Dust Woman. Again, falls under top songs about drugs, maybe? I don't know. Is it about drugs? It seems like
I mean, it's another Stevie Nicks.
Yeah.
That's definitely a Stevie Nicks gauzy song.
Gauzy song.
She's just kind of floating around
on stage. Yeah.
And to the point of the production quality, Vic, this is one of those albums that was recorded at a legendary studio called Sound City.
Yeah.
And another great documentary. If you're interested in learning more about it, there's one called Sound City involving Dave Grohl from Nirvana and the Foo Fighters. just kind of taking you through all the legendary albums I record at this one studio and why it worked out so well for them.
And Rick Springfield's in it.
He is in it. Well, then I'm watching.
Oh, that's cool. I would definitely want to watch that. Yeah. There's got to be a ton. That's another thing I'm going to get into here is documentaries.
You know,
On these bands, which I've never really been into. But Final Track, Silver Springs, it's very pretty and sad. It's a breakup song.
Yeah, they've had a lot of breakup songs. Can I give you a suggestion?
Please.
Since you liked Rumors, their 75 album 2 years before that, self-titled Fleetwood Mac. Has a song on it that Stevie Nicks wrote that is, I think, one of the most beautiful songs ever written in the history of music. And it's one of my very, very favorite songs. It's so good, even Billy Corgan can't ruin it. It's a song called Landslide. And it's about this, whether she's going to continue with Lindsey Buckingham or not. I mean, this is, again, about their relationship. Uh-huh. It's really amazing to see them perform that song live because, like, she's standing right next to Lindsey Buckingham and singing Landslide, like, looking right at him.
And they broke up then? Yeah, they
broke up, got back together, broke up, got back together. And then she slept with Mick Fleetwood. Slept with Mick Fleetwood, and they, you know.
It's a real saga.
It is. But that song, if you like, you know, sort of those melancholy Fleetwood Mac songs, Landslide is one of the greatest songs of all time.
Yeah, I am familiar with Landslide. I Songbird knocked me out of my shoes with how touching that one was, but I haven't listened to Landslide in a long time. So it is a
phenomenal song. So all right, great. That's Rumors. Let's take a break, Vic. We got the news coming up, and then we got two more albums to go through. It's Vic's Picks Extended Cut. Landslide.
Get ready to switch gears.
I love that song so much. So that's Landslide, written by Stevie Nicks, and it's my favorite Fleetwood Mac song of all time. We were talking about Rumors, of which Landslide is not on that album, but we're back with Vic's Picks, and we're moving on to the next album, which is one of the most legendary live albums ever recorded. Yes. What are we going to next, Vic?
I love this album, number 25, James Brown Live at the Apollo by James Brown. 1963, an easy album to love. It's live, obviously. It moves fast. They jump from song to song really quickly. You get through, there's like, you know, no breaks. It's just they push record and it goes through the whole album. You get through 11 tracks in 32 minutes. Track one, just Lucas Fats Gonder introducing James Brown. Gonder played the organ that night. He's in James Brown's orchestra, but he played the organ that night at the Apollo, October 24th, 63. Track two is the first song, I'll Go Crazy. While I was researching it it's very early James Brown song. It was his fourth R&B hit. Lots of people have covered it. And I had a lot of fun with this track, Nick, because I love James Brown version of it. But I wanted to go through the other covers because there was a lot. There was a lot of people who covered it. And so Chris Isaak covered it, Rolling Stones, Buddy Guy, The Buckinghams, Moody Blues, Clarence Clemens. I listened to all of them. I thought Chris Isaak's cover was beautiful. And you know Chris Isaak.
Yeah.
It's like seductive a little. Yeah. It's a phenomenal cover, I think. But Buddy Guy's version is the best cover, in my opinion. I like it the best of all, actually. It's an awesome guitar solo, too, in the Buddy Guy version. The music, I thought, was just superior from the start of Buddy Guy's cover. But even Buddy Guy's vocals on that cover are unique, too. Third track on James Brown, Live at the Apollo, Try Me, I Need You. Brown's vocals sound he sounds vulnerable in this song. It's really, and that was one of the things I was not expecting. I hadn't listened to a lot of James Brown. I know I just kind of had this opinion that he just screams a lot and dances around on stage, but he's got a beautiful voice.
Oh, he does.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Love
especially
James Brown
especially
now.
In the 60s in that time period. You know,
really?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Man, he's but in this song, again, it's a big difference too. It's an abrupt slowdown. from the first two things. Because two wasn't a song, but it was very energized the way Fats came out and introduced them. I'll Go Crazy moves really quickly. So when this song comes on, the women in the crowd seem to like this one a lot, too. A lot of screaming, mm-hmm. in fact. And there's a there's an hilarious part of this song. 30 seconds left before the end, you hear a woman in the audience scream so loudly and for so long that you can hear her tonsils rattling in the back of her throat. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
But track four, another reason it seems like a quick album, again, just 32 minutes, is because track four, it's just a 12-second instrumental bridge. So that happens three times on this album. So there's really only seven songs. One track is the intro, three are little instrumental bridges, and then the seventh is a medley of three songs. But track five is a song called Think. I looked it up, and this is a cover of a top 10 hit by a band called The Five Royales, out of North Carolina. I looked them up, too. Lowen Pauling, the guitar player for the Royales, wrote that song. But it hit the charts in 57, so James Brown, on this night, he's covering it about 5 years later and for the recording of this at the Apollo. But I listened to the original as well. I like Brown's cover better. Because I like the backup vocals from the famous Flames, band, they are amazing on this track.
Let's hear a little bit of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's some parts in there where the famous Flames, they almost, to me, sounded like an instrument. Well, I know your voice is an instrument, but they sounded like a trumpet or something. It was just so tight.
Yeah.
And really good, really good.
Great band that he, phenomenal band that he worked with on that.
Yeah. That's what I'm learning. Track six, another little bridge. Track seven, I Don't Mind. The intro, I thought this song was awesome. It's like four notes. It's like bum, 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 bum. I don't know. It's great. The crowd goes crazy for this song. Brown's vocals, I thought, were amazing as usual throughout this entire album. But the backup singers, again, on this one were ridiculous to me. They just really started to shine through to me when I started to really focus on the famous Flames. Amazing. Track eight, that's just the final bridge, 11 seconds. Track nine, Lost Someone. I think it's a departure from the rest of the album in that he really goes off on this one. It's 11 minutes long almost. The other ones are pretty short, but he really goes off on this track. And I looked up the studio version. It's like less than 4 minutes.
Right.
So, but again, I got to say that this little thing about this one, the 6 minutes, 2 seconds into this 11-minute live version, that same woman screams again. and this time, I'm not kidding. It's about 4 to 5 times louder than the original scream, and it's beautiful because the people in the audience, you can hear them start to laugh about it, and then James Brown, I'm pretty sure, starts singing about her for a second because I listened to the original one. I looked at the lyrics. It's nowhere in there, and just what he's saying at this point in the song after she screams, It fits the moment. I'm pretty sure he's singing right to her. And then he says something like, I believe someone in here loves somebody. That's what he said after she screamed. And she's like, you can hear her say, yeah, you. But they have this really cute, funny little exchange back and forth. And I thought that was really cool. And again, the sound in the Apollo Theater, the ambient sound of the audience and everything, you really feel like you're there when you listen to this album, especially with headphones. You got to do that. And if you haven't, James Brown live at the Apollo is incredible. I would assume you can attribute that sound maybe to the people at the Apollo Theater.
I mean, the Apollo Theater is a legendary theater.
Sure.
Located in Harlem, obviously in New York, and at that time, in the 60s and into the 70s, it's a heavily African American community, and the theater was known for catering to African American artists and audiences. And at that time, James Brown was a black icon, and was his entire career. And you know, the reason why that audience is so enthusiastic is because it was like, this artist is here for us. This was in the 60s, you know, when it wasn't the easiest time in the world for civil rights. And so this guy represented a lot to that community, and to have him play. And obviously, you know, it's very important to have recorded this appearance at the Apollo, because it's a legendary, black theater at that time. And, you know, perhaps the top black artist of that time performing for an all black audience at the Apollo Theater.
Yeah.
It's historic. And they captured it beautifully. And the band was on fire. He was on fire that night. And obviously the crowd was having an incredible time. And that's one of the reasons why this record is considered one of the most important live albums ever recorded, is because it captured that time in history. It really did, like lightning in a bottle.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. This album, man. I mean, and I have, like I said, I haven't listened to a lot of James Brown, like a lot of other bands, but especially small amount of James Brown. But this album for me, out of the 75 albums I've listened to, is definitely top 10. I love it. It's absolutely. And I want to say something real quickly about this album. Track 10 is the one that's a medley of three songs. The first one is Please, Please, Please. I thought this was really cool. I looked into what the backstory was for that song, and it's very interesting. Etta James is quoted as saying, that, and I know Etta James, saying that James Brown and his band came up with the idea because James Brown used to carry around this old napkin with him for, I guess, sentimental reasons, but he carried it around because Little Richard had written the words "Please, Please, Please" on it, and James Brown, according to Etta James, said that's why. James Brown told her that he, some way, somehow, was going to write a song about it, and that's how this song came out.
Yeah, there you go.
Pretty cool.
Cool. All right, Vic, hang on. We got a break here for some weather, and then we got one more album to talk about, Vic's Picks, which we do every Friday morning. We'll start it again because we were a couple of weeks behind. So normally this segment starts at 3:30, and we'll do two albums a week, but we wanted to play catch up here. We got one more album to get to on Vic's musical journey on Vic's Picks.
To keep them strong, moving in the right direction, living just enough for the city. His father works some days for 14 hours, and you can bet.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. One of the best songs Stevie Wonder ever wrote. Epic song. Living for the City. And that's on the album Inner Visions, which is what we're going to talk about right here. But coming up also, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Okay, Vic, next. Yes, Stevie Wonder.
Yep, number 24, Inner Visions by Stevie Wonder, 1973. This is the third album on the Rolling Stones Top 100 Greatest Albums list of all time that I've already listened to, that I've listened to by Stevie Wonder. Number 90 was Talking Book, and 57 was Songs in the Key of Life. But Inner Visions, nine songs. The album's about 45 minutes long, 44 minutes long. It was his 16th studio album, and he was only 23. Mm-hmm. And it won a Grammy for Album of the Year and for Engineering. And I also learned that Inner Visions was produced during what's referred to as Stevie Wonder's classic years period. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The 70s were a very... Nobody could touch Stevie Wonder in the 70s. Nobody.
Yeah, so they called it that because he was still producing his own records. I guess that's one of the reasons anyway. But so Inner Visions peaked at number 4 on the Billboard. I found the album to be very funky. I heard a lot of synthesizer. There was a harmonica solo, which I love the harmonica. So I really enjoyed this album. It was there was a wow moment for me. I read that 6 of the 9 tracks on this album, Stevie Wonder played either all of the instruments that you hear or nearly all of the instruments.
Yep.
It's incredible.
Yep.
There were moments when I was listening, like again, some of the tracks, it's only him. And it's just an experience to sit and listen to a song that sounds like there's probably 10 people involved and it's one person.
Another artist who did that on a regular basis was Prince. Their Prince played every single musical instrument on almost all of his albums, and he was completely inspired by Stevie Wonder.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Track one, Too High. It's about what you'd think it'd be about, drug use, drug abuse. I did read that Stevie Wonder really didn't sing much about that that topic. But this one, it's got a real jazz sound to it. It's Too High. I liked it. I did like it. Track two, Visions. I learned that this is one of three songs on the album that does involve some other people. There were other musicians on bass, acoustic, and electric. But Stevie Wonder played everything else on this track. It's a beautiful song. The music's soft. It's nice, relaxing guitar. It just feels spacious because the notes just the song allows the notes just kind of float for a while. I don't know. I fell in love with that song. I'm falling in love with Stevie Wonder after listening to this, to some of his stuff too. This is the third album I've listened to by him. But, track three, you mentioned, and we played a little clip, Living for the City. Tom did, won a Grammy for Best R&B Song. Huge, like you said, huge hit. And since we're working on a Rolling Stone list, album list, I should mention this song also ranked number 105 out of their top 500 greatest songs of all time. But it's a trip to listen to because it's all Stevie Wonder. I mean, he plays every instrument. So
and it's also a very political song that reflected what was happening at the time.
Yeah,
completely. And it is to this day just as effective as it was back then.
Yeah, like you said. And I also read it as one of the first soul songs that dealt with that
yep.
you know, issue that just systemic racism.
Yeah,
one of the first ones.
Yep.
Track four, Golden Lady.
Beautiful song.
Yeah, it is. It's a love song that he wrote, too. But, gorgeous song. It was never released as a single, but still reached number four on the Billboard Top 200. But I read quite a bit about this song. It has a lot of interesting components in it, about it, about the composition. One of them, he uses a chord at the end of the chorus that I read is generally found in classical music. It's called the Picardy Third, but there are a lot of aspects about Golden Lady's composition that were notable to musicologists. I don't know what I'm talking about with all that stuff, but it was quite a groundbreaking song as far as its composition. Again, that's all way over my head, so I won't go into it much, but I did read a lot about it. It was very interesting. Track five, Higher Ground. I've heard this song before. I'm sure this one's been on Fly Jams Friday, no?
Many times. And it's also it also was covered very famously and very popularly by the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's a great version, too. It's a really, really great cover. And that became a big hit for them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, Red Hot Chili Peppers, their bass guitar player.
Flea.
Oh,
Flea.
Yeah.
I almost said Fly. I went to out in the suburbs. I got invited to a New Year's Eve party and I met the guy who I would say claimed to be the guy who taught Flea, but everybody there confirmed it. Do you know who I'm talking about?
No.
Okay. I'll have to find out before I throw out things like
Johnny Bassman.
Yeah.
I don't know what his name is, but it was very interesting. He actually offered to teach me bass.
Wow.
Well, that'd be pretty sweet.
Wouldn't it? Yeah, this guy was really cool. But, okay, back to this, though. Where was I at? That was track five we were talking about.
Yeah.
Track six, Jesus, Children of America. This one, if you know it, you may have to help me out because it seems like it's maybe criticizing so-called holy rollers back in the 1970s.
That's exactly what it is.
That's what I figured.
Yeah,
I mean, if you just take it for what you listen to. But I'm really not sure because there seem to be quite a few different opions of what it's about.
That's the most divisive song on the record.
Mm.
Of all the songs on the record, that's the one that splits people right down the middle.
Well, you know, they say never talk about religion or politics.
Well, true.
Yeah, I can see that. But after I listened to it, I think it's... but kind of a song to me about just kind of practicing what you preach. But
yeah.
But anyway, track seven, All in Love is Fair. What a great song about how relationships, you know, sometimes end. The chords he chose, the sound of the song just really set this feeling of reflection, not really regret, but it just sets the stage for introspect, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
I really, really loved track seven, All in Love is Fair.
Now, the next song, let me just say this. The next song is one of my favorite songs of all time and is a song that no matter how bad my mood is, no matter how sad I am, no matter how bummed out I am, the minute I hear this song, I'm fine. I'm happy. I love this song.
my notes, it's a very upbeat, positive sounding song.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, he wrote a positive message of kind of taking things in stride here. And yeah, it's a playful song.
Yes, don't you worry about a thing.
It's playful. I mean, the beginning starts with like a Latin piano, yep. And then there's like some, he's trying to, I don't know, maybe pick up a woman. You can hear him talking in Spanish. But yeah, it's a very cool song.
Yeah, let's hear a little bit of this one.
Don't you worry about a thing. Cause I'll be standing on the side when you check it out. You say your style of life.
It's so good, this song. Here's how much I love this song. I adore this song, and it just makes me happy every time I hear it. Really, truly makes me happy every time I hear it.
Yep.
This is how much I love this song. Eddie Murphy made this horrendous movie called Holy Man. Back in the 90s, a really, really awful, awful movie that I hated. But I stayed through all the end credits because they played that song during the end credits of the movie.
Oh, wow.
If they hadn't, I couldn't get out of the theater fast enough.
Right.
You know what I mean? But I was like, oh, okay, now I'm staying for the next 4 minutes because I want to hear this song.
Right. Yeah,
nice,
I can see that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I wouldn't walk out of a room if it came
on.
Oh,
it's beautiful. Mm-mm, I love
that
song.
The end of it.
Adore
nope.
that song. God.
Final track, He's Mr. Know-It-All.
Yeah.
It's a pretty song. Stevie Wonder plays most of the instruments on this one, too, but obviously sings lead vocals, but he also sings backup vocals, because lead vocals wasn't enough, I guess. So he sings backup vocals on it, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
But it sounds to me like it's about what you think, a know-it-all, the lyrics. This is my opinion, anyway. It just sounds like it's about a kind of a know-it-all. The lyrics say, he's a man with a plan, got a counterfeit dollar in his hand. A lot of people I read on people who've written what they think this song's about. A lot of people wrote that they think it's about Richard Nixon. I don't know if that's true. I'm sure you've heard that, I guess. I don't know if Stevie Wonder actually, you know, I don't know if that's actually confirmed, but anyway, it's amazing production and sound on this entire album, and Stevie Wonder's vocals, his talent just floor me. I don't know what else to say.
No,
you're in the presence of a genius.
At that time, no one was better. And if you want to check out even more, obviously, Songs in the Key of Life, Talking Book, Music of My Mind, Fulfilling This First Finale. These are all amazing records that came out during that streak where he was just on fire. So, all right, there you go. We got more albums that we're going to be listening to with Vic, and thank you, Vic, for sharing.
Thank you, Nick.
Here's Dummy. You big dummy. You big dummy. See what you did?
Oh, no, you big dummy.
You dummy.
Yeah. All right. How's everybody doing? Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. By the way, I wanted to tell Vic, we will not be doing Vic's picks next week because I'm off.
Oh, are you again? What the heck?
Well, it's the flashback the flashback horror convention.
Yeah, I knew that.
Of which I'm the full weekend I'm at the Crown Plaza Hotel. So I'm going to be off on Friday and Monday. I'm off on the 2nd and the 5th, so we'll have to do another double duty.
All right,
the following week.
Sounds good.
Of Vic's picks. There you go. All right. Yeah, welcome back. It's Nick DiGilio here. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio on Friday morning. All the regular Friday features are still coming up as well. We've got Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, and Fly Jams Friday. But right now, it's time for You Big Dummy. This is when we read real news stories of real dumb people doing real dumb stuff. Real dumb stuff. And then we vote on who's the biggest dummy. Tom votes, I vote, and then first person through at 312-981-7200 after I do the recap votes. And we crown the dummy of the week on You Big Dummy. Dummy number one, dummy number one, dummy number one. An Indiana woman reportedly showed up to a meeting with a probation officer wearing somebody else's dentures. What? What? According to the Jennings County Sheriff's Office Facebook page, a woman reported her dentures stolen on Monday and said Joanne Childers had not only taken the teeth, but was also sporting the stolen smile. Oh, man. The same day, a deputy had a meeting with Childers, in which he noticed she was wearing dentures that clearly were not hers, the Post said. On Wednesday's, I don't understand what's happening here. I'm slightly baffled by this one. On Wednesday, deputies located Childers at her home and spoke to her about the deputies located Childers at her home and spoke to her about the stolen teeth. While there, they reportedly spotted the dentures in question, easily identified by the victim by the victim's name written on them. Childers is facing theft charges, and the dentures have been recovered.
Get lost, dummy.
Before this game, you were just a plain dummy. But after the night, you'd be a broke dummy.
Do you really want them back? That's the question. Don't you think you should go get some new dentures?
Yeah, no.
Do you really want those back? I mean,
I like that her name was written on them.
Everything about that story is ridiculous. I could hardly get through it. But I just like, yeah, you know what? I'll take those back. They were in this other crazy woman's mouth. Just give me my dentures back. I want them back because my name's on them.
She's been given the alias the Tooth Fairy.
I don't understand. The dentures. They spotted the dentures. I don't. Okay. All right. I don't know. I don't know. Dummy number two. Oh, boy. A historic bridge in North Dakota built in 1906 collapsed Monday after a tractor trailer hauling beans and exceeding the weight limit drove over it, the Grand Forks County Sheriff's Office said in a statement. The bridge, which is on the National Register of Historic Places, spans the Goose River and is rated for 14 tons of gross weight, which is marked on the structure, according to the Sheriff's Office. The weight of the big rig was about 84,560 pounds, or just over 42 tons. It was loaded with 49,820 pounds of dry beans, the sheriff's office said on Tuesday. The weight was revised downward from initial reports Monday when the sheriff's office said that it weighed 43 tons. Officials estimate that it will cost between $800,000 and $1 million to replace the bridge. The driver of the 2005 Peterbilt truck was identified as Michael Dodds. He was not injured. An overload citation of $11,400 was issued. Holy cow. $11,000. Well, hell, it's going to cost $1 million to get the bridge fixed or to repair or to replace. The sheriff's office said the incident is under investigation. A phone number for Dodds could not immediately be found. Oh, yeah. The collapse of the bridge southwest of the town of Northwood occurred around 1:15 local time when deputies arrived. The trailer of the truck was hung up on the west abutment, they said. And photos released by the sheriff's office showed the 56-foot-long bridge had partially collapsed with the trailer hanging along one section of the buckled span. The sheriff's office did not name the bridge, but said it was 1.5 miles west of Northwood. Grand Forks County Engineer Nick West said in an email Tuesday that the span of the Northwood Bridge is a total loss. The Northwood Bridge, also known as the Goose River Bridge, was called a historic in application documents on the National Register of Historic Places in 1997 because it was the oldest documented bridge in Grand Forks County.
Sold to the dummy with the black mustache. What kind of life do you think it is being the father of a young dummy?
You know, Tom, my apartment is right by a viaduct.
Yeah.
And there was a period of time, it hasn't happened in a long time, but there was a period of time when trucks were tuna canning and like splitting apart under that viaduct like monthly. There was a period of time, I'm not kidding, where at least, and the time I've lived there 8 years now, and I've probably seen 10, 12 trucks.
That's a lot of tuna cans.
One, like Mad Max style, flipped over on its side. Gas started pouring out onto it. I thought, you know, hasn't happened in a long time, and maybe they fixed the sign, because my theory was that, you know, because they repave the streets, but then they don't change the sign, the height of the sign. So they put, like, tar or on top of the road so that the road is higher, and then they don't change the sign. So meanwhile, you know, these truck drivers are tearing their trailers apart. But the scariest one, it flipped over, and I'll tell you something. Whenever it happened, loudest sound ever. Like, it's the scariest thing ever. The entire apartment shook. I look out the window. There's another truck. It's crazy. All right, let's get one more in here. Dummy number three, dummy number three, dummy number three. A man stole an ambulance from outside a Texas hospital early this morning and then told officers he did so because he needed to get food and cigarettes. The suspect, who was not named but described as being in his 60s, took the vehicle from the Cypress Creek Hospital, a psychiatric facility. Oh, there's a shocker. A psychiatric facility in Houston just after 12 a.m. He was located by Harris County Sheriff's Office deputies at a gas station on W. Ricky Road. According to 6ABC, officials said that the ambulance had been left with its engine running outside the hospital where the man is believed to have been a patient. When deputies asked him why he stole the vehicle, the suspect claimed, quote, quote-unquote, needed a ride. Inside, officers found the man had obtained fried chicken from KFC and cigarettes. The suspect was detained and will be charged with an unauthorized use of motor vehicle, police said. He was taken into custody without incident. It was not immediately clear how long he was in possession of the ambulance. They reported deputies said that he responded around 2:30 a.m. A Harris County Sheriff's media rep did not immediately respond for a request to comment. KFC and cigarettes.
And for every dummy, there's a dummy.
All right. Let's take a quick break here for some weather, and we'll come back. We got two more dummies to read. We shall vote on the dummies, and then more of Straight Outta Context and Nick D Show Spies. That's coming up as well. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It is Friday morning. Fly Jams Friday. We'll be coming up, so you want to get your requests in for some funky soul and R&B and Fly Jams. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Straight Out of Context is coming up, and of course, a Nick D Show Spies. All here on this Friday morning. Let's get back to You Big Dummy. Dummy number four, dummy number four, dummy four. A man who climbed onto the wing of a plane as it prepared for takeoff at the airport in Nigeria's Lagos City has been arrested. Authorities said the man, who's not been identified, walked towards the aircraft on the runway, was spotted by the pilot, who slowed down and later turned off the engine as the man continued to wander around the aircraft. He then jumped onto a wing of the plane and tried to access the cabin, the airline said. The pilot radioed the tarmac to report the incident, according to the airline. The incident happened Friday morning at the domestic wing of the Murtala Muhammad International Airport in Lagos. A video taken by a passenger on the aircraft shows the man moving around the wing of the plane as frightened passengers called on the crew to open the exit doors. The incident did not delay the flight. Wow. The incident did not delay the flight, which was headed to Port Harcourt in Nigeria's Niger Delta. However, passengers and crew members disembarked for another round of security checks, the airline said. That's a pretty impressive airline. That's a pretty impressive airline.
Meanwhile, you know, one kid keeps kicking and they won't take off for United.
Speaking of kids, did you see the footage of the kid who jumped on the luggage conveyor belt and got taken through the entire airport? And the mother said, I hope he had a nice trip. He's going down conveyor belts. There's luggage falling all over the place.
Woo!
Yeah. And the mother's like, I hope he had a nice trip. Are you kidding me? The footage is really scary, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's a toddler, too.
One dummy ain't enough in this house. You got to bring home super dummy. But if you and Rollo going to be in the movie, I got the perfect name for it. Super Dummies.
Dummy number five, dummy number five, dummy number five. A New Mexico woman is facing charges after police say she ordered food from a Sonic and told the server, this one's on God, before fleeing. The Las Cruces Sun News reports that 30-year-old Delia Hernandez was arrested on Monday on felony robbery charges. Police say Hernandez rode her bike to a Sonic and ordered a meal. When the server asked for payment, she allegedly told him, this one's on God. Police say the servers told her that's not how it works, but gave her the meal after she came toward him. The police later found Hernandez at a nearby park.
There's something for you right here. Want it. Dummy. Won't be long before we'll hear the pitter-patter of tiny dummies around the house.
All right. We got to do a recap, and then we have to vote. Let's go here. All right. And then, by the way, after the recap, you out there, first person through at 312-981-7200, first person through, will vote and be the third vote. All right. Let's recap. We have the dummy who wore stolen dentures to meet a probation officer. We have the dummy who drove a 42-ton truck filled with beans over a 100-year-old bridge. We have the dummy who stole an ambulance so he could buy fried chicken and cigarettes. We get the dummy who jumped on the plane wing as it was about to take off. And we have the dummy who ordered food at a Sonic and said, this one's on God. Some quality dummies this week, I got to say.
Very good dummies.
Some entertaining dummies. All right. That's the recap. Tom, where's your vote going? And by the way, the first person through at 312-981-7200 will be our third vote. Tom, what are you thinking?
I got, as someone who lives near a Sonic, I got to go for this one's on this God. I don't know anybody. I mean, anybody that lives in my neighborhood that would be so brazen as to pull that at the Wilson Sonic.
Not only that, she was on a bike.
Amazing.
I mean, that's a great, I got to say, there's some good ones here, man. You know, the guy who stole the ambulance so he can get some KFC and cigarettes. That's good. That's quality dumb. Guy jumping on a plane wing as it's about to take off.
I know which one you have to go with, though.
And, I mean, the dummy who said, this one's on God, but, man, I got to go with the dentures because I can't.
You were losing.
I don't even know what to make of it. I don't know if I've laughed that hard. It's been a long time since I laughed that hard at a dummy story. I couldn't even. So I'm going with the woman who stole the dentures and wore them to see her probation officer.
It's just, I mean, you know, they say serial killers always return to the scene of the crime, and I guess this is like that.
I guess. And I just love the fact that the woman took the dentures back. Yeah, thank you for returning my dentures that were in this psycho's mouth. Yeah, I'm going dentures. So we have two separate ones here. So we have to choose between the two. So our third person on the line has to choose either the dummy who went to Sonic and said, this one's on God, or they have to choose the dummy who stole dentures. So those are your two choices. Dave is here. Dave, you got two choices. You got the dummy who ordered the food and said, this one's on God, or you got the dummy who stole the dentures. Where are you going?
I have to go with the Dentures because of the fact, first off, that you laughed so hard you couldn't even get it out. And, I mean, I was laughing myself. And the second part of that is the fact that she actually wrote her name on the dentures.
That might be the key. That might be the key to the entire story, is that the woman wrote her name on her dentures.
Yep.
Okay. All right, Dave. Thanks, man.
Thank you. Love
our
show.
Thank you. That's our dummy of the week. Although I got to say, you know, this one's on God is no slouch in the dumb department. This one's on God. That is fantastic. At a Sonic. Not even the two dudes in the commercials would try to pull that one off. The two doofuses in the Sonic commercials. It's pretty funny. And also, I mean, come on, there's also classic ambulance. You steal an ambulance so that you can get some KFC and cigarettes. It's when you're desperate for some KFC and you're desperate for some cigarettes if you're going to steal an ambulance to do that.
Well, it's not the 70s anymore. They can't just send a young Nick DiGilio to just go
with a note.
Go buy it.
Yes, I give permission for my 9-year-old child to buy cigarettes from you. That's a real thing that happened in the 70s.
I imagine that it was a little bit like Mitch going to buy booze in Days of
Confused. Oh, it's exactly what it was. You're 18, aren't you?
It's all right. I know your daddy.
You know what's hilarious? My favorite moment in that scene, and it's just one of those moments where you go, oh, God. Do you remember the person who's checking out in front of Mitch?
Oh, yeah.
Person who's checking out in front of Mitch Kramer happens to be buying a bottle of booze, smoking a cigarette, pack of cigarettes. She buys a pack of cigarette and bottle of booze. She's clearly 8 months pregnant.
Now, remember, eat a green thing
every
day.
Eat a green thing every day. All right. And then he goes, see you tomorrow night. It is one of those moments where you go, oh, God. But it is a 70s moment. Eight-month pregnant woman buying booze and cigarettes. Well, see you. Eat a green thing every day. See you
it's
tomorrow
important
night.
For a new mother to eat a green thing every day.
Here's some more green for you. Here's some more money for your wallet. One of the greatest movies of all time. Okay, we got to take a break. The news is coming up next. Then after the news, the regular stuff continues with Straight Out of Context. And then Nick D Show Spies and Fly Jams Friday. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. News after this. So when I'm in your neighborhood, you better duck. Because Ice Cube is crazy as F-bomb. As I leave, believe I'm stomping. But when I come back, boy, I'm coming straight out of context.
Context.
Tell them where you're from.
Straight out of context.
That's right. Straight out of context, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here. Welcome back. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran has your morning drive at 6 a.m. Excuse me. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Coming up a little bit later on, Fly Jams Friday. So get your requests in going. Luscious Hushus will play them for you. All right, but right now it's time for Straight Out of Context. This is when you listen to this radio station 24/7, and whenever anybody at any time says something that you can pull out of context and it sounds kind of dirty and it makes you giggle a little bit, jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. All right.
All right, let's
Tom,
do this.
Let's do it.
Okay, so first one coming to us from Kevin in Iowa. This is Richard Pettengill, our good friend, who Kevin referred to simply as Hippie Guy.
Hippie Guy. Okay.
I didn't even know she was coming.
Okay. All right. That was his sister he met at Woodstock. Our friend Richard Pettengill, by the way, was at Woodstock and has amazing stories and is putting them in a book, which is coming out in the fall.
Got to get it.
Very cool guy. Okay.
All right. Next up.
Hippie Guy.
Scott from Carpentersville caught this one.
Somebody lick their fingers and touch your head?
Little Steve Cochran.
That's good. All right.
All right. Mike H. Caught this one on the Rokon show.
I actually had a bearded dragon for quite some time.
Oh, my God.
Oh. Lauren Lapka. The always amazing Lauren Lapka. Is that what they're calling it nowadays?
Wow. That's pretty funny. That is pretty funny. Okay.
All right. Number four here. This is coming to us from Night Owl.
I think they'd be very impressed by my beef.
But what?
I think they'd be very impressed by my beef.
By my beef?
Yeah, by my beef.
Oh, okay. All right, okay.
Well, he's always screaming.
That's so Roe. It's always Roe. Screams all the time, yeah. Okay. And screams about his beef.
Here's another one from Night Owl, also from the Roe Khan show.
He grew to about maybe 12 inches long.
Oh, that's big.
Lauren and Anna.
Oh, man. What is going on there on the afternoon drive?
Who knows? Ask Kay Powell.
Need to have a chaperone?
Tell him to reel it in.
Good Lord. All right.
All right. Next up, this is coming to us from Fox Valley Mike. Here's Steve Cochran and John DeCoss.
You like apples? How about these apples?
Wow.
That's a good one. That's good. Wow.
Wow. That was when D and them incorrectly said that Matt Damon and Ben Affleck hadn't worked together since Good Will Hunting.
That's not true.
That's not true. Dogma.
Yeah.
Dogma.
Yeah.
All right.
Did somebody correct them?
And Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, actually.
And Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. That's right. Did anybody correct them?
I think later they did, but they said Dogma, but not Jay and Silent Bob.
And so was that, wait a minute, he misquoted. If he was quoting Good Will Hunting, that's not the line.
Yeah. How do you like apples?
Yeah, how do you like, well, he says, yeah. I can't remember.
Ah, who knows?
Yeah.
All right. Next up, this is from Dirty Dave. Here's Dean.
I'm a sticky mess.
What the hell? What is happening there? Whose show was he on?
That was on the Steve Cochran show.
Why was he on the phone?
He was in Arizona.
Oh, that's why he was a sticky mess.
Yeah.
Because he was in Arizona.
Of course.
Well, he could have been here, you know, if it was last week.
Oh, absolutely.
Good Lord. All right.
And here's Dean yet again.
Oh, good.
This is coming to us from Linda.
And you know how wrong that is when you're missing a nut.
Oh, no. Uh-huh. Oh, brother. All right.
Okay. Next up, here's a celebrity.
Uh-oh.
A celebrity one. The great Drake Cajula, or however you say his last name.
What?
I believe he plays for the Blackhawks, Drake Cajula.
Oh, yeah,
Cajula?
Yeah, sure.
He was on the Steve Cochran show.
Hey, I'll come on the show as often as you guys need me if I'm going to keep scoring.
Oh, man. Yeah. Cochran always does a great job with We Have Hawks guys. Hey, by the way, Blackhawks convention this weekend.
Yeah.
At the Hilton.
Huge.
Roe is going to start coverage right at 3:00, and I know that Steve is going to be and Steve and Dave are going to be talking about the big intro of all the players and everything and all that cool stuff. So
it's going to be a big one.
Yeah, it's a great weekend. They do it up good. The Hawks know how to do a convention. They do it
Absolutely.
Up really good, and so it's going to be a fun weekend over at the Hilton. So get down there. Okay.
All right. Next up, here's Mark Carman, and giving us a little insight into his personal life.
We've had animals in the bed. It could be an animal situation.
What? Do I need to hear that? I don't need to hear that. I can't unhear that.
Pending nuptials.
Good Lord. Okay.
All right. This next one's coming to us from Brian. Brian J. Here's Elton Jim Toronto.
I mean, every time she's down there, I go, oops.
Oh, no. Man. Oh, man. Ay-yi-yi. I don't even know what to say there. Oh, I really don't even know what to say there. All right, Elton Jim.
And even a little bit more here
from
Elton Jim, again from Brian J.
So she couldn't get in the back door.
Oh, man, Elton Jim. Filthy.
I know.
Okay.
Well, and this next one I'm a little bit upset about because this is Vic Vaughn turning on me. This is Vic Vaughn on me.
Vic Vaughn reported this one. Okay.
Because
he's a jerk. So Vic Vaughn turning on Tom. So I'm assuming this is you reported by and submitted by the one and only Vic Vaughn.
Yes, here it is.
You got the toast?
I'm getting it from both sides here. referring to Arby's.
Nice catch. Arby's. Nice catch. Yeah, Arby's, the greatest sandwiches in the world.
Okay.
All right.
All right, just a couple more here. Real quick, here is Ro, caught by Barbara.
Drive me over to the house, because she wants to go play with a snake.
What is it? What were they talking? Was there, like, somebody really wanted to play with a real snake?
There were bearded dragons and
bearded
snakes.
Bearded dragons and snakes? What's going on?
Oh, my.
What is happening?
And then finally, Anna DeVlante is this one caught by Kim.
By the way, I was just going to say, let me just say, to make it very, very clear, we now know what it's like to have Wendy Snyder on vacation.
Damn, I wondered. I was like, wow, not a lot of Snyder this week.
Wendy Snyder was on vacation. Goes to show you. That's the only time she does not show up on Straight Out of Context is when she's not working.
Yeah.
So, all right, I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead. What were you saying again?
So this is Anna DeVlante is caught by Kim.
I love that thing.
Listen,
when do you use it?
Wow.
Okay.
All right. Man, wow. Ro dominating this
big week for Ro.
This week. Big week for Ro. All right.
Get him in your fantasy draft.
That's right. Yeah. The Straight Out of Context fantasy draft. Yeah, that's right. All right.
Ooh, what do you do? No one else can dance like you. So what's all of us? There ain't nobody
spies.
Like
hey.
Someone took your plans away. So what's all of us? There ain't nobody
spies.
Like us.
Yeah, there it is. You know that intro. That is the intro for Nick D's show, Spies. Once again, this is when you listen to this radio station 24/7. And whenever anybody at any time mentions me or the show in any capacity, we want to know about it. You become a spy. Jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. All right, Tom, let's start it off.
All right. Just one spy this week.
Okay.
Just one, but it's a good one. So this is coming to us from the Steve Cochran Show, and this was sent in by many people. So a lot of people caught this one. It was a big one, so no direct attribution.
Okay.
New records have been pinned down by Variety. To state the film officially passed the $2.78 billion mark in the global box office and was just inches away from passing Avatar's $2.7897 billion. In other words, the biggest money-making movie of all time. And, you know, I've still never seen Avatar.
Seriously? I haven't either.
Really?
It is the worst.
Wow. No, it's not. It's a really good movie.
Is it the best movie you've ever seen, though?
No, it's not the best movie I've ever seen, but it was quite spectacular when it came out. I remember watching it at the theater going, wow, this is pretty cool.
I don't understand why it made that much money. I never really did.
Just watching a bunch of
the special effects were kind
of
cool, and you know, anything that's sort of fantasy and sci-fi, people love that stuff.
Hmm. Not all people.
Okay. I agree with you. That's not my kind of thing.
I think Nick DiGiulio doesn't like it either. I think, but yeah, I never liked that movie. It's really
well, Nick's wrong about a lot of things, though.
I know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not wrong about that. That movie is called, in my book, it's called Crapitar. And wait, here's Mary. Yeah, Mary, you're right. I hated that movie.
I am so with you.
It is a terrible movie.
I could not even make it through the whole thing.
It is
those blue people, and you know, it's just come on, quit, you know, going from trapeze to trapeze or whatever they were doing.
It was really, truly. All right, yes, okay. So special effects, they spent a lot of money on it. 3D,
sure,
fine,
it was
whatever,
cool.
Whatever.
Yeah.
It is one of the stupidest movies I've ever seen in my life. Like, truly one of the stupidest films I've ever seen.
Yeah, the whole plot, the love story.
Ridiculous.
Like, oh.
And this is what I've said about it. I call it Crapitar.
Because I love that.
It's because it's crap. But also, it's the only movie that I've ever seen that I think, I'm pretty sure, was written by a group of drunk monkeys. Not even sober monkeys. Drunk monkeys
kind of
wrote
what
that
they
movie.
Look like in
yeah.
the movie.
It's just it's a terrible movie.
Yeah.
A terrible
I don't know why Bill Leff liked it.
Oh.
My youngest brother, when we went to go see it, we saw it in IMAX 3D over at Navy Pier.
Yeah.
And I guess he never got the 3D glasses.
Oh, no!
And he was too... I noticed he didn't have them. I was like, just go ask the lady for one. And he's, no, he's too nervous. So he sat through the entire movie.
Which is like 3 hours.
Yeah, in IMAX 3D, just staring at a blurry screen.
Oh, that's terrible. That makes me so sad.
Yeah, he was a dummy.
Well, why didn't you go get him for him?
Because I was like 15. I was like, I'm not going to do it.
Maybe the movie looked better that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe it made more sense.
Did he like it?
Did he like it?
No, he thought it was terrible. I said, well, duh.
Well, even with the glasses, it's terrible.
Well, no, I didn't like it.
It's a stupid movie.
I could have stayed home and watched Pocahontas.
Pocahontas or Dances with Wolves, it's the same crap. By the way, I don't know if you're aware of this, Mayor. I don't know if you've been waiting, you know, for the 10 years since that movie came out. He's got two sequels coming out.
What?
Yeah.
Ah, it's been 10 years already?
Yeah, 10 years. And he thinks that people are interested in seeing two more sequels to Avatar.
Oh,
James Cameron.
Crapitar 2.
Crapitar 2, Crapitar 3.
The crappening.
All right. Let's take a break for the weather. And Mary, you are right about that movie. That's all I'm saying. All right. Let's take a break for the weather. When we come back, we'll start off with some fly jams. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. All right. Here's your forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. Today, partly sunny, a little bit warmer, a high in the upper 80s, and partly cloudy tonight, warmer overnight with a low in the low 70s. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, breezy, warm, high near 90, a little bit higher humidity. Clouds will increase overnight down to the 70s, low 70s for a low. For Sunday, partly sunny, breezy, moderate humidity, chance for an afternoon or evening thunderstorm, high in the low 90s, down to the 70s for a low. Monday, scattered showers, thunderstorms, especially in the afternoon. It'll be humid with a high in the mid-80s, clearing skies overnight, cooling down to the mid-60s. And then for Tuesday, mostly sunny, increasing clouds, cooler with a high of only near in the low 80s, partly cloudy overnight, a low in the mid-60s. Currently 70 degrees at O'Hare, at 70 at Midway, 71 at the lakefront. All right, let's take a break here, and when we come back, Fly Jams Friday shall commence.
When I grew up on the farm, fly was something we sprayed to kill, and jam was something we put on our breakfast toast.
Jam. Fly jam. Fly Jams Friday.
Oh, yeah. This is Fly Jam Friday on your overnight radio with my man, Nick D, on 720 WGN.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Fly Jams Friday. This is where we get funky. 312-981-7200. Coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Gazanich has the opening bell. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. There you go. All right. We are here, and I am Wiki Wiki Nikki, Viggity 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 Vic, Verified Double V, running around in the newsroom like a lunatic. And he's here. It's DJ Luscious Hushes.
Oh, yeah, Luscious Hushes, baby.
That's right. All right. We've got some requests already, Luscious Hushes.
Oh, yeah, we're in.
Let's get some funky stuff going on Fly Jams Friday.
All right. First up, it's a classic. Have You Seen Her by the Shy Lights is coming to us from Bob. This one's for you, buddy.
One month ago today, I was happy as a lark. But now I go for walks, to the movies, maybe to the park. I have a seat on the same old bench to watch the children play. You know, tomorrow is their future. But for me, just another day. They all gather around me.
Poor guy. They seem to know my name. He's heartbroken. By the way, I just kind of busted out laughing because I looked up and there was a Fixident commercial, and the first thing I thought of was our dummy of the week. There was a Fixident commercial showing, you know, the dentures, putting the Fixident. But the thing that was lacking was the person's name on the dentures.
Yeah, apparently it's not written. We had a couple people text in and call in. It's not written on, but like when you get dentures, they like print it.
They put your name on them?
They put your name on them.
Is that right?
Yeah.
When did they start doing that?
I don't know. Maybe it's a smart idea. I mean, you got several people with dentures in the room. How are you supposed to know which set of fake teeth is yours?
Okay. All right.
Except mine would be the one with the gold cap. You know?
I had... wow. Okay. I didn't know that was a thing. See, you learn something new every day on this program. All right. What's next here, funky-wise?
All right, next up, this is a request from... We haven't heard from him for a while. Bennett, the Business of Funk Wake Night.
Oh, there he is.
There he is.
The finest voice artist in the history of voice work.
Yeah. Yeah. So he did a special one here, and I promised him I would do this.
Okay.
K-Billy, Super Sounds of the 70s Weekend just keeps on coming with this little ditty that reached 21 in May of 1970. George Baker selection, Little Green Bag.
That song is forever going to be associated with the opening of Reservoir Dogs. There's no question about it.
One of the best opening sequences.
It's great.
Of all time.
It's great. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, opened last night, and you saw it. If you want to remind everybody that you loved it, Tom.
Sorry.
That you saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and you loved it.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed it.
Yep.
I really, really liked it.
It is out right now. I'm seeing it tomorrow, and I hope it. I hope it's great. And so there you go, more Quentin Tarantino for you. And that was a little nice pick there. Nice pick there, Bennett. That's a funky song.
That super sound of the 70s.
Yeah, with
Stephen Wright.
Stephen Wright. Yeah,
just keeps on trucking.
Yeah, Stephen Wright. So I believe Dean is reviewing. They're showing clips right now on Channel 9.
Okay.
And it's they're showing the scene with Kurt Russell in the trailer. He gave it a B. Dean gave it a B. Need I remind you, he gave Lion King an A-. I just...
Listen, I'll call into his show on Sunday. Okay. I'll tell him what for.
All right. Where are we going now?
Right now, we're going to go to a bona fide classic. It's a little bit of... Michael Jackson. This is coming to us from Mike in Louisville, and he want to be starting something.
There you go. All right. Yeah, funky. Fly Jams Friday. Hey, by the way, you're seeing ELO this weekend, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Oh, man, you're going to have so much fun.
Yeah, I'm freaking out.
It's at the UC tomorrow night?
Yeah.
Saturday night,
United Center. I haven't been there for a concert since I saw Eric Clapton.
By the way, I was just looking at Dean's weekend. Did you know that Weird Al is playing Ravinia this weekend?
Yeah.
Come on now! Man!
Fun stuff.
He's the best. Well, you're going to have a good time.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Like I said, one of the greatest concerts I ever saw in my life, 1977, Out of the Blue Tour at Chicago Stadium.
The minute we hit Living Thing, I think I might ascend to heaven.
For me, it's Mr. Blue Sky.
Yep. So,
all right, one last song.
One last song coming to us from Nick DiGilio, the elder.
My dad.
Yes.
My dad making a request for Fly Jams.
It's a little bit of Jerry Butler, Hey Western Union Man.
Classic.
Oh, my goodness.
Here we go. Baby, this is what I want you to say. Want you to tell her that I'm all alone. I tried to call her on the phone. Tell her I'm in misery and think she's avoiding me. And if the telegram don't do, send a box of candy too, and maybe some flowers. Tell her that I missed her for hours and hours. Send a telegram, send a telegram. Hurry up, send a telegram, man. My baby, dad's got good taste in music, man.
Unbelievable.
That is a so great, good. Great song. All right. We're going to break here. The news is coming up next, right here on 720 WGN.